is in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. What's not to like? I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and the question is, when is a deal not a deal? When it's a framework lied about by a man rendered even more ridiculous than usual by the belated discovery of some backbone by various other international leaders, including Sir Keir Starmer, but most obviously, of course, Mark Carney, a man who many of the people riding high in this country politically chose to completely ignore when he explained what the consequences of Brexit would be. So, as the great chicken makes his way back to Washington, D.C., what have we actually learned? What have we actually discovered? And I don't suppose there's a chance, is there, that there is actually a deal here? It just goes to a different school?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the UK has opted not to take part in a signing ceremony in Davos later for Donald Trump's so-called Board of Peace. The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper said it's because of concerns about Vladimir Putin's possible involvement. The Kremlin says the Russian president is considering the invitation to join the panel. Ms. Cooper says she's sceptical about Moscow's agenda.
Is Putin serious about peace? Because I haven't yet seen any signs that he is. That is what we need to see. I still think we're going to need more pressure on Russia to bring them to the table. Really, Putin needs to now show he is ready for peace.
The US Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is due to travel to Moscow for talks on ending the war with Ukraine, while Donald Trump's expected to meet Ukraine's leader Vladimir Zelensky at Davos this afternoon. Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed Donald Trump's decision to drop the threat of tariffs over the future of Greenland. The Prime Minister says allies can now find a way forward on Arctic security after a framework was agreed. An investigation by LBC's found the AI chatbot Grok can provide instructions on how to make chemical weapons. The government says it's in direct talks with X to take immediate action to remove the content. Chemical weapons expert Lenny Phillips has told LBC it's very concerning.
What the information from Grok does is take away the mystery of lab work and opens the possibility to those who previously believed they would need access to specific facilities, equipment or chemicals. There is additionally information as to what catches people out, such as quantities of chemicals produced, self-poisoning and smells that could easily be picked up by neighbours.
X is yet to respond to LBC for a request for comment. Pressure's increasing on the government to ban social media for under-16s. The House of Lords has now backed an amendment calling for the measure, and it'll now go to the Commons. Ministers have begun a three-month consultation on a potential ban. And teaching unions are calling for more guidance to help parents to make sure their children are ready to start school. The surveys found more than a quarter of young people are not able to use books correctly when they start primary. The government says it inherited a system where disadvantage was allowed to deepen, but is determined to tackle it. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 72 at 10,070. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many today. Some heavy rain for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time, and we find ourselves once again circling the toilet bowl of the post-world order in the company of the Mango Mussolini. Yesterday's speech to Davos, to the World Economic Forum in Davos, was a masterclass in idiocy and possibly encroaching dementia. If Joe Biden had got Greenland mixed up with Iceland several times, it would probably be on the front page of the Daily Mail. It would certainly be on front pages of American newspapers, as yet more evidence of his clear cognitive decline. But the thing about Donald Trump that's really hard to actually articulate is that because the ridiculousness and the horror go hand in hand, and crucially, this is the really crucial bit, and I know you probably already know it, but sometimes it's helpful to hear someone else put it into words. Because there is so much of it, it loses all impact and it loses all importance. There's so many individual instances of the unconscionable. But when they are following so fast upon each other that you literally can't keep count, then they cease to resonate in the way that they would do in isolation. Think about all the individual instances of moral depravity or political corruption that we have seen. Had they occurred under any other presidency, they would have occurred individually and in isolation, and they would have been, at the very least, impeachable and quite possibly career-ending. Certainly, electoral hopes would have been dashed at the first mention of many of the things that Trump mentions millions of times. This is a really important thing. Isn't it amazing that we can still stumble into some territory that feels vaguely fresh? Or are we just repackaging previous observations in new words? Are we saying all the right words, but not necessarily in the right order? That double combination. So the horror and the hilarity go hand in hand. I think the horror gets diluted by the ridiculousness. He announces something truly gross, but then he does something accidentally. This is the great irony of the situation, is that the stuff that dilutes the horror is the stuff that he does by accident. The best example is probably they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs, which simultaneously a horrific lie worthy of the Nazis. And we'll get on to some behaviour by ICE later in the programme that is absolutely worthy of the Nazis. And it pains me enormously to tell you that I've found a way of showing you that Anne Frank pointed out that what ICE are doing now is very much of a piece with what the Nazis were doing when she was hiding in that attic in Amsterdam. But the way that it goes hand in hand with ridiculousness. So you shiver and laugh at the same time. But there is so much of it. So much of it that you can't get a handle on it. It's like trying to climb 10 mountains at once with the same crampons. It's like trying to herd cats. It's like trying to nail jelly, or jello for my American listeners. It's like trying to nail jello to the wall, nail jelly to the wall. You can't do it. Today, not only is he supposed to be holding a signing ceremony for his ridiculous Board of Peace, ridiculous, but Vladimir Putin is potentially one of the signatories. Horrific. Vladimir Putin will sign only if he can get the $1 billion that he has to give to Donald Trump from assets that have been frozen as a consequence of his illegal invasion of Ukraine. Horrific. Donald Trump has also invited Benjamin Netanyahu to join his Board of Peace, a man facing ever-growing accusations and allegations of masterminding an actual genocide. Horrific. And Donald Trump wants to stay in charge of this ludicrous confection even after he ceases to be president. Horrific. But yesterday he was talking about Greenland and he kept calling it Iceland. Hilarious. Where do you put your attention? Where do you go with your focus? Where do you lead with your analysis? Tempting, of course, to do what we would have done had it been Joe Biden, and focus upon the clear cognitive decline, the absurdity. But then probably we should be talking about the cowardly climb down. The fact that, you know, he has absolutely bottled all of the things that he was adamant he would be doing just 10 minutes ago. Should we be focusing on that? The cowardice, the climb down, the chicken, the taco. What does taco stand for? Trump always chickens out. Taco Trump. Should we be focusing on that? No, because then we'd be ignoring the Board of Peace. So we'll focus on the Board of Peace. Board of Peace. Crikey. Oh, no, hang on. We can't focus on the Board of Peace because we've got to talk about the fact that he's talking about annexing a country that he can't even remember the name of while boasting about receiving a Nobel Prize from a woman that he can't even remember the name of. Listen to the Iceland thing, just in case you think that I am exaggerating. Just for illustration, because I know I couldn't find a better way of putting it, but in normal times, what do you want to call it? In normal times, I believe the Board of Peace is being unveiled as we speak. Stand by for finding out who's on it, which people of genocide apologists, war criminals. I'm not even joking. But we can't focus on that because we're still a little bit distracted by this.
But I'm not sure that they'd be there for us if we gave them the call. Gentlemen, we are being attacked. We're under attack by such and such a nation. I know them all very well. I'm not sure that they'd be there. I know we'd be there for them. I don't know that they'd be there for us. So with all of the money we expend, with all of the blood, sweat, and tears, I don't know that they'd be there for us. They're not there for us on Iceland, that I can tell you. I mean, our stock market took the first dip yesterday because of Iceland. So Iceland's already cost us a lot of money.
He doesn't just get it wrong. He gets it wrong three times in a single sentence. Or in two sentences. And then Caroline Leavitt, the White House spokesperson, lies. Like, literally lies. Literally says he never said Iceland. Have a listen to go. Actually, just clip up the back end of that, will you? The last few seconds of it. Because I just want you to hear it three or four times. And then reflect upon the fact that the White House press secretary says it never happened. It never happened. He never got it mixed up with Iceland. In his written notes, he described Greenland as a land of ice. But he never, ever said in his speech Iceland when he meant Greenland. What do you do in those moments? So we've got another thing to focus on. It's not just the cognitive decline. It's the evidence of Orwellian dystopia. The party told you to ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most terrible command. And there it is. The White House press secretary insisted last night that Donald Trump never said Iceland in this speech.
They're not there for us on Iceland, that I can tell you. I mean, our stock market took the first dip yesterday because of Iceland. So Iceland's already cost us a lot of money.
And we're talking about that now, when we should probably be talking about the cowardly climb down. We should probably be crossing live to Davos to hear him explain what happened yesterday. Thank you, Mr. President. 11 minutes after 10 is the time. So we can't talk about the Iceland debacle, because we should be talking about the chickening out, the climb down. But we can't really talk about that because we should probably be talking about the Orwellian subtext of the White House press secretary denying that he said the word Iceland that you just heard him say three times in a short clip. But we shouldn't be talking about any of that because we should probably be talking about the Board of Peace ceremony that is about to begin, which looks not unlike the bar in Star Wars. It's a collection of freaks, weirdos, war criminals and genocidal leaders who are now joining what Donald Trump calls the Board of Peace in return for giving him $1 billion, which Vladimir Putin intends to find from assets that have been frozen as an internationally sanctioned punishment for the illegal invasion of Ukraine. So where do we put that on the list? We've got to write down the Putin and the sanctions, the Netanyahu and the genocide, the Board of Peace. Should we cross and see what's going on there? Well, why not, eh? Because I don't know what else we should be talking about. Let's have a listen.
And we'll work with many others, including the United Nations. But I want to thank you all for being here yesterday. We had an incredibly successful visit with many of the world's top business leaders, the best, the biggest, most successful, and foreign heads of state, and now we have one of the
This is real, if you're just tuning in. This is the actual president of the actual United States on actual television.
The Board of Peace. I want to thank Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, and Jared Kushner, and their extraordinary work. I mean, they have done an amazing job. We have peace in the Middle East. Nobody thought that was possible. We've settled 8 wars, and I believe another one's coming pretty soon.
You know, go on, name them, Donald.
The one that I thought was going to be an easy one has turned out to be probably the most difficult. Last month, 29,000...
There were 11 people killed in Gaza yesterday, including journalists and children, according to medics on the ground there. So that's the ceasefire.
27,000 in the month before, 26,000 in the month before that. It's terrible. But we have meetings and we think we're making a lot of progress. Thanks as well to Secretary Scott Bessent, Howard Lutnick, and Chris Wright, U.S. Trade Representative, Jamison Greer. They're all doing such an incredible job. Ambassador Callista Gingrich, who
was
here.
That Joe Biden, he sounded slow, didn't he, when he was delivering his speeches?
Fantastic work. Thank you, Callista. And many other members of my administration who are so committed to peace. And they're also committed to great success. Very importantly, let me recognize the very first group of distinguished members of the Board of Peace. They will be introduced by name in just a moment.
Be still, my beating heart.
That introduction. And to each and every one of you, we are truly honored by your presence today. Leaders of countries, in most cases, very popular leaders. In some cases, not so popular, but that's the way it goes in life. Thanks as well to...
I should also add, Israel just bombed the Israeli-Lebanon border, so the peace in the Middle East is
fantastic man. Just debatable. Won a very big election. I'm very proud of him. Amazing. Along with former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Tony Blair. Thank you, Tony, for being here. We appreciate it.
For shame, honestly.
And members of the Board of Peace Executive Board. Great group. This week marks the one-year anniversary of my second inauguration as president. No administration in history has achieved such a sweeping turnaround in 12 months.
Should we take a break and see whether he's still droning on interminably and meaninglessly when we come back, or do you want to listen to more of this?
We won every.
That's not a rhetorical question. I'm consulting both my enormous audience and my tiny team of colleagues. What do we think?
Is it possible? Because it's not done.
Because we could be here for about a day and a half, by my reckoning.
Back at home.
That's silly. We could be here for about a day and a quarter.
The U.S. economy is booming with virtually
we
no
don't want
inflation.
To be here for a day and a quarter. Let's pay the bills and then see if he's moved on to anything vaguely substantive when we get back. It is 10:16.
LBC.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record, and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
To be... or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60
973. With a very good general and a very good leader of Egypt, we're working on a dam that was built which precludes the Nile River from getting water. That was, it's a little tough situation. But
see what I mean, what I was saying earlier about the horror going hand in hand with the ridiculousness, which makes it really hard to properly analyze the horror. If you're just joining us, this is the President of the United States of America talking almost undiluted gibberish at the World Economic Forum in Davos prior to unveiling a so-called Board of Peace, membership of which entails paying him $1 billion, and membership at the present point apparently includes the war criminal Vladimir Putin and the genocidal Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu.
And of course the war in Gaza, which is really...
This is live, by the way, in case you were listening yesterday and can't tell the difference.
Little fires that we'll put out, but they're little. They were giant, giant, massive fires, and now they're down to little fires. We can put them out very easily. We have 59 countries that
are involved in peace in the Middle East. Many of them not in the Middle East. They're near the Middle East, but they're not in the Middle East. And many have said that if Hamas doesn't do what they promised they would do, and I think they probably will, but they were born with rifles in their hands.
11 killed in Gaza literally yesterday, born. Including journalists and children, first according day, to medics on the ground, and four Syria-Lebanon crossings bombed in the last the end of them. 24 but hours. At least two dead in South Lebanon.
Countries have told me we
oh, but
go
don't worry, because Benjamin Netanyahu's on the board of peace.
You traditionally think of as being involved in that. But that's a fire.
Where he will, Hezbollah, I presume, be sitting Lebanon on Vladimir Putin's knee.
Do something about that. But these are, I call them remnants. They're small remnants compared to what it was before it was
Do you
massive,
want to take a bet on when he actually
large,
starts
powerful countries
properly
each other
listing the
in another great
various clowns
the ultimate
and criminals who are sitting on his board
in June,
peace.
We obliterated
I'll leave you to decide if Tony
capacity
Blair is indeed signing up for this, because there's a few days when he said
Operation,
he wasn't. A few days ago he said he wasn't.
Midnight,
I'll leave you to decide which of those categories Tony Blair deserves
one of those bombs
to be put in,
the
clown or criminal.
Bombers hit the air shafts and went deep into the earth and totally obliterated everything that they were doing. They were 2 months away from having a nuclear weapon. Can't let that happen.
No evidence
and
or proof
Iran
for that.
Iran does want to talk.
But I tell you what, thank God that old doddery bloke Joe Biden didn't win the election.
ISIS in Syria.
Didn't even run.
And very strongly, as you know, in my first administration, I took out al-Baghdadi, the founder of ISIS, and he was trying to start it up again because due to the tremendous talent of General Raisin Kane, as I call him, he wiped out ISIS in a period of 3 weeks of my first term. You know, we had a great first term. But the second term is, I think, blowing it away, actually.
ISIS is still active in Nigeria, Mozambique, Sahel, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sinai, conducting attacks, inspiring lone wolf attacks, and even a stabbing in Austria last year was undertaken by someone pledging loyalty to ISIS.
Tremendous progress, actually. We're very happy about that. We took off all sanctions, which gives them a chance to breathe and He is working very, very hard, and I think he's going to put it all together.
Anyway, remember, if you find any of this remotely discomforting, disturbing, disgusting, shocking, tragic, sad, appalling, hideous, hilarious, you are suffering from what was until very recently described as Trump derangement syndrome. I'll tell you what, I'm beginning to worry he might drone on for so long we might have to cancel Mystery Hour. We'll return to Davos should the president actually get around to remembering what it is that he is supposed to be speaking about. I could now spend a few minutes running through the wars that he claims to have ended, one of which involving a country that didn't previously exist, known as Azerbaijan, which often pops up in his speeches. I suppose the people of Azerbaijan should be grateful that he almost gets their country correct, when the people of Greenland will forevermore be known in Donald Trump's universe as the people of Iceland, while his press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, insists on the record, that he never said Iceland instead of Greenland, in the speech from which we took a clip a few moments ago, in which he said Iceland instead of Greenland on at least three separate occasions. But remember, ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most terrible command. The question I was going to ask you was what we have learned from the last 24 hours. What have we learned from the last 24 hours? From the fact that leaders, including Keir Starmer, albeit that he began the week being quite conciliatory or appeasing, he certainly looks like ending it with a fairly hefty victory under his belt. You can tell how concerned Donald Trump was about Keir Starmer's refusal to bend by the fact that he completely U-turned on the US policy towards the Chagos Islands. Listen, there are criticisms to be made of the deal done over the Chagos Islands, but they weren't made by Donald Trump or Marco Rubio when they heralded and applauded the signing of the deal, which ended negotiations that had been started by Kemi Badenoch's Conservative Party. So the opportunism on display at PMQs yesterday was almost up there with the opportunism on display from Donald Trump. But it was an illustration for those of us who care about such things of the role that Keir Starmer was playing. Why would he take a ludicrous swing, a swing at Donald Trump that made him look like a hypocrite and a liar? Donald Trump takes a swing at Keir Starmer that makes Trump look like a hypocrite and a liar, unless he was really troubled by what Starmer was doing. So it looks like ending this week with Keir Starmer having secured another fairly hefty victory, but as a consequence, of course, of union, a victory secured as a consequence of concerted and unified action by powers, by countries, by leaders who are recognizing, as Mark Carney described earlier this week, the disappearance of the old world order, the removal of the United States of America from the top of whatever political or military pyramid it is that we've all lived in for the last 80 years. And when you do that, you have to find a new vocabulary of resistance and rejection. And this week they've done it. Donald Trump is crawling back to Washington later with his tail between his legs. This speech, in large part, is an exercise in pretending otherwise. The future of Greenland, from a Greenlander's point of view, seems safe. Although, of course, not long ago, he said he would never use military force in Venezuela. And then he did. So the promise, or the pledge yesterday, that he would never use military force in Greenland is at least questionable and not something you'd necessarily bet your house on. But he climbed down. He's withdrawn the threat of sanctions, despite the fact that the people he was threatening to sanction have not done any of the things he said they would have to do in order to ensure the withdrawal of sanctions. And if you thought I was exaggerating 20 minutes ago when I told you that it is almost impossible to properly chronicle, analyze and keep track of this stuff because there is so much of it, well, you don't think I'm exaggerating now, because we should be talking about the cognitive decline. We should be talking about the cowardice. We should be talking about the war criminals and genocide apologists on his Board of Peace. We should be talking about the Orwellian dystopia ushered in by his press secretary lying about what we actually heard him say. We should be talking about Putin's presence on this ludicrous committee. We should be talking about the fact that Vladimir Putin is going to get the $1 billion he needs to pony up to Donald Trump from assets that were frozen as a punishment for the illegal invasion of Ukraine. We should be talking about the fact that he keeps saying Iceland instead of Greenland. We should be talking about all of these things, but we're not. I don't even know what we're talking about now. But that's fine, because this guy doesn't know what he's talking about either. I didn't mean that one. I meant to go back to Davos, but that's, it didn't work.
To do, and then they came, they said, you be the chairman. And, but I take it very seriously. We have a great group of people and incredible young people that are leading it from within. It's running beautifully, started already. And every country, just about every country, wants to be a part of it. And we just sent out the letters a couple of days ago, and these are just the countries that are here. They happen to be in Davos. So we said, would be honored if you wanted to join us up on the stage. And it's really great. They're friends of mine. I think, let me see. Yeah, every one of them is a friend of mine. A couple I like. Couple I don't like. No, I like, actually, this group, I like every single one of them. Can you believe it?
This is the President of the United States of America speaking at an august gathering of world leaders. This is not a comedy program. This is not an impersonator. This is not a drill.
They're great leaders. And the Board of Peace is composed of leaders, the top leaders in the world, actually. Last October, we released a plan for the permanent end to the conflict in Gaza, and I'm pleased to say that our vision was unanimously adopted by the United Nations Security Council late last year. Under phase one of this plan, we have painstakingly maintained that Gaza, and we're going to have it very strongly, and it's what we have, maintained the Gaza ceasefire, delivered record levels of humanitarian aid. We've given aid, you know, you...
Israeli fire killed 11 in Gaza yesterday, including journalists and children, and there were four strikes on southern Lebanon.
The United States, but I want to thank some of the...
Four Syria-Lebanon border crossings bombed. Two dead in South Lebanon, but on he goes. And, of course, Caroline Leavitt will be along in a moment to tell you that none of that happened.
We go out and purchase food and... You don't hear those stories anymore with people starving. And secured the release of all 20. You know, we secured the release of all 20 living hostages. Now, I want to thank Steve Witkoff and Jared and everybody for working so hard. They worked so hard, but there were 20 remaining living hostages. Now, we got hundreds out. But the last 20, I said, boy, that's going to be a tough one. I said that a year before. And it was a tough one, but we got them. Got all 20, every one of them. And we had also about 28 that were dead. But the parents wanted them just as though they were living, just as much. Some cases, it almost seemed more. It was amazing, actually, the love and but their boy had been killed in just about all cases, young men.
So, again, if you thought I was exaggerating when I told you that it was impossible properly to chronicle, I rarely get the chance to take this stuff live because of the time differences between the United Kingdom and the United States. But what do you do? In any other circumstances, the leader of the free world delivering a speech about the formation of a rival body to the United Nations Security Council would be the focus of our absolutely undiluted attention. But this is a little bit like Grandad, Grandpa from The Simpsons delivering an interminable monologue on primetime television. We'll take the news. God only knows what he'll be wanging on about when we come back. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Donald Trump has officially unveiled the founding members of his so-called Board of Peace at the ceremony in Davos. The UK's opted not to take part in the signing because of concerns about Vladimir Putin's possible involvement. Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed Donald Trump's decision to drop the threat of tariffs over the future of Greenland. The Prime Minister says allies can now find a way forward on Arctic security after a framework was agreed. And it's been confirmed the first group of illegal migrants have been moved into a former barracks in East Sussex. The Home Office says it's scaling up the use of military sites as part of efforts to close asylum hotels. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many, heavy rain for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning. Listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Hannah entered the Omaze £1 million house draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next when you enter by this Sunday at omaze.co.uk. Because one person is guaranteed to win a £5 million house in London with all the furniture. And £250,000 just to help you settle in. Roger recently opened the door to a brand new future.
Is this a dream?
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million, you must enter by this Sunday at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
33 minutes after 10 is the time. And now they're signing this document. And it was signed, of course, because Donald Trump just told you, by all the greatest leaders, all the most important leaders in the world. Some you might even have heard of, such as the leader of Egypt, the Egyptian president, widely regarded as a dictator, and considered even by the American organization Freedom House to be governing Egypt in an authoritarian manner. About 60,000 political prisoners estimated to be in Egypt at the moment, so he's a shoo-in for Donald Trump's Board of Peace. You've got Saudi Arabia's foreign minister there, of course, a representative of the Crown Prince, who is considered to have ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, a journalist who was dismembered in the Turkish embassy. the Saudi embassy in Turkey, and lo and behold, the Turkish leader is going to be joining this board of peace as well. Donald Trump is now holding it up. That's the end of my commentary. Donald Trump is now holding it up.
The Prime Minister of Armenia.
All the big leaders, all the great leaders. Here comes the Prime Minister of Armenia. I suspect that we're done. I'll leave you to ponder the importance of the Indonesian president, the Argentinian president, the Saudi Arabian foreign minister, the Azerbaijani president, the Armenian prime minister, the Paraguayan president. Everyone was trying to get him on their team, and the president of Kazakhstan. These are the people that have agreed, presumably, to pony up $1 billion. And the Jared Kushner character to whom Donald Trump keeps referring is his son-in-law. That is his only qualification to be involved in any of these negotiations. And he conducts himself as a sort of de facto international diplomat while simultaneously pursuing business interests that are delivering the sort of sums of money that make even Donald Trump's corruption look relatively paltry. How many people think still of Jimmy Carter's family peanut farm when they look at how Donald Trump has turned the United States of America into a money-making and a money-laundering machine for him, his cronies, his family, and his closest associates? And speaking of money-laundering, Nigel Farage is in Davos, and the 17 breaches of the rules that he has been found to have committed included one donation from a bloke who was accused of money laundering in the United States of America not long ago. So I don't know whether any of these threads need knitting together, but if you can't see it yet, then it's highly likely that you never will. So we have spent the best part of this week, and it is still only Thursday, discussing the changes to the world order signalled by the obvious and explicit designs upon the sovereign territory of Greenland that were being articulated by the unhinged president of the United States of America, Donald Trump. We know that he was serious because the people who pathetically whined not long ago that you should not look at what he says but look at what he does have finally woken up to the fact that he always tries to do what he has said he will do. The question that hung over that simple observation was this: how do you stop him from doing what he wants to do? How do you stop him from breaching international law or from breaching convention, from breaching tradition, from breaching decency, from detaching the United States of America from the rules-based international order? And there was a sense, and we have had that sense here, that you couldn't, that there was nothing you could do, that the power invested in the president of the United States of America, whoever it may be, was such that the rest of the world had little choice but to respond to his order to jump by simply asking how high. I began this week wondering whether Sir Keir Starmer had got it right. By Tuesday, I had concluded that he'd got it wrong. But in fact, he moved so quickly and so comprehensively in the correct direction that by PMQs yesterday, he was able to lecture the leader of the opposition, Kemi Badenoch, on the pathetic decision to support Donald Trump's attempts to undermine European international solidarity and indeed Keir Starmer's personal and political determination to resist Donald Trump's ludicrous caprice. This entire obscenity that is unfolding in Davos now is designed to do one thing and one thing only. I am allergic to dead cats. I know what you're thinking. Take an antihistamine and how come you're not allergic to living ones? But I'm speaking metaphorically. Well, it is true that distraction tactics are absolutely intrinsic to the dictator's playbook. And it is true that Donald Trump is desperate for attention not to return, or to at least return much later rather than sooner, to the Epstein files. But this entire edifice is designed to stop you and me talking about the climb down, the mother of all climb downs. Even the BBC found the courage to describe it as such. This is all designed to hijack the news agenda. The news agenda, which should, frankly, be full of quotes from Donald Trump that sound very much like this, will instead now be dedicated to the ludicrous notion that a collection of genocide apologists, war criminals, weirdos, dictators and murderers, or at least murderers factotai. Factota? What's the plural of factotum? Answers on a postcard, please. will be dominating the news agenda, and we will be turning our attention away from his humiliation yesterday. And it's worked, because I've spent 40 minutes talking about the Board of Peace, brackets, snigger closed brackets, and not talking about the climb down yesterday. I opened the show today by explaining to you how impossible it was to keep track of things. I gave you a long list of things that could all be dominating our conversation, and I forgot to work out which was the one Donald Trump would be least keen on having us talk about. And that will be the humiliation, because he can deny the cognitive decline. But when he claims that there's a deal in the offing, if he can't produce the deal, everybody knows that he's lying. Caroline Leavitt can claim that he never said Iceland instead of Greenland, even though we heard him say it. They can gloss over that. They can gish gallop their way through that. But what he can't do is camouflage or paper over the fact that there's no deal and there are no tariffs. He has bottled it. Donald Trump is, and I don't know whether this is a transatlantic phrase, so you may need someone to explain it to you. He is a bottle job. He is a chicken. He is a coward. He is a taco. Trump always chickens out. But we're not talking about him chickening out. We're talking about him constructing a committee of human beings so hideous and ridiculous. I still can't quite believe Tony Blair is going to be on it. He's not there, but, you know, stranger things have happened. He is there. He is there. Tony Blair is sitting in the company of the people that we've just listed. And again, I cannot even begin to understand why, except for the old adage about it being better to, he's in Davos. I don't think he's on stage. Better to be in a tent weeing out than it is to be outside a tent weeing in. I don't know. Well, you need to be in the room where it happens to stop the really bad stuff from happening. That is a question that Keir Starmer will be struggling with this morning. So what we're going to do is resist the temptation to talk about this nonsense and focus instead on the big story of the week, which is still Greenland. And it is the fact that with a brilliant speech from Mark Carney, and with a show of unity and resistance from various other leaders, Donald Trump has backed down. Donald Trump has backed off. Donald Trump has bottled it. What have we learned? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345-6060-973 is the number you need. This is quite a moment. You could see earlier in the week the unclenching of hands that were still clinging to the carcass of Trump being anything other than ridiculous stroke hideous. You had some relatively prominent cheerleaders finally recognizing that the only person with Trump derangement syndrome was Trump. And increasingly, of course, the people still clinging to the notion that he's anything other than hideous stroke ridiculous. But what we have seen on the biggest stage of all is him essentially forced into a position of retreat. The idea that he was so powerful, that he was so big, that he was so irresistible is an idea essentially disseminated by Donald Trump. And yet when the world finally found an ability to say, absolutely not, absolutely and categorically not, when some leaders became focus points for resistance, when Mark Carney broke cover and Keir Starmer followed and Emmanuel Macron weighed in, he folded like a cheap suit. He collapsed like a house of cards. So in the context of moving forward, okay, what have we learned? Why do you think Donald Trump bottled it? And it takes an understanding of the issues to answer that question substantively. It's not just that a bully got bullied. There's got to be more going on behind the scenes. There's more moving parts than that. So why do you think Donald Trump bottled it? And what does this teach us about the future, about handling him or the state of the planet moving forward? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345-6060-973. They're signing the speech. They're all clapping each other. It is an event, a spectacle of complete ridiculousness. But as I said to you 40 minutes ago, the ridiculousness goes hand in hand with the hideousness. The hilarity goes hand in hand with the horror. And the horror gets diluted every time we laugh, every time we find it funny, every time we point out the ridiculousness. The horror gets diluted. The hideousness gets leavened. But what has this week taught us? A, about why he's climbed down, why he's chickened out, why he's bottled it, and B, about what we can learn from that moment, from these events, that the civilized world, as we increasingly are going to have to think of the coalition without America, what can the civilized world learn from what has happened this week? 0345 60 60 973.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl. More to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Quick question. Well, actually three. But they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco Club Card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:47 is the time, and of course he was still lying about the 2020 elections yesterday. The absurdity, the absolute insanity of these situations doesn't end until he's gone, until he's out of office. I can't quite imagine anybody else, even J.D. Vance, managing to ride the twin horses of horror and hilarity so effectively. It's because it's a psychological concept, not a political one. And there it is. So the whole focus of the world will be on this ludicrous signing ceremony in Davos, and nobody is talking about the epic climb down, the humiliation, the failure of his entire mission. Well, we are. Amir is in Richmond. What have we learned?
Hi, James. Hello, enjoy your program.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Well, what we learn, I think, in my opinion, is that we need to stick together, i.e. United Kingdom and European. I think we need to narrow our gap with Europe in terms of economy and defense, because frankly, I think Trump aside for what he's doing and done, I think we need to, you know, in 3 years' time, you know, think about the fact that, you know, America may not, you know, come to our help. Besides, dependency is never a good idea. It's a sign of weakness, in my opinion.
Well, it didn't used to be. I mean, there's nothing unhealthy about economies of scale. You know, if your ally is bigger than you are, that's historically quite a good thing. But as you've just reminded us, until he stops being your ally, until she stops being your ally, at which point the level of dependency that you have upon them becomes dangerous, the bigger it is.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, and you're listening, excuse me, and you're listening in a number of elements of that he's saying and doing. As a British Iranian who lived here over 50 years, I just want to say that I'm sure you recall that he gave this bravado that he want to come to help the Iranian. And in some extent, he pushed more people into the street. I'm not right, you're wrong. Maybe my statement is not quite right. But and maybe some more people got killed, and I think this is another thing, you know, that in a sense, we feel I don't want to use the word betrayed, but in a sense that, you know, people thought they did something coming and nothing came. So I think
and people risk their lives in order to join protests in expectation of American intervention and American support, and then of course if there's nothing in it for Donald Trump, the American intervention and the American support doesn't come. I wonder what would happen if the Iranian president ponied up $1 billion for a seat on the Board of Peace. I'm not even joking, by the way, because if Netanyahu and Putin can be there, why shouldn't the Iranian president be there? That's a question you can answer if you want. 03456060973. But the question we're really asking is, what have we learned from this epic climb down? What have we learned from this, humiliation about how to treat Trump in the future? And why do you think it happened? So Amir and I, going for the obvious answer, it is because of the resistance. But it must be more than that, because Trump could, of course, send troops into Greenland. He could easily mount some sort of military campaign and help himself to the territory. And he certainly refused to rule out the possibility of doing so. Stephen Miller, his key aide, I think would have quite enjoyed the prospect of putting American boots on the ground in continental Europe. So he has bottled it. And I want you to tell me why you think that has happened. AD is in Bristol. AD, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello,
how are you?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think to be fair, it comes down to the good old-fashioned time. I think they probably underestimated the opposition to this, the strength of opposition from Europe and from elsewhere. And maybe when they've actually gained in annexation...
It's a terrible phone line, mate. I wonder how significant the Danish bonds decision was, because if lots of other countries had followed Denmark on getting rid of the US Treasury bonds, then the hit, the financial hit, as that lovely lady in Barbados explained to us earlier in the week, Victoria, the financial hit would have been felt all the way back at home. That could be it. That could be part of it. Just to answer questions, and feel free to send a few in. Tony Blair hasn't paid $1 billion. In fact, earlier in the week, he kind of distanced himself from that part of the project, but he has not distanced himself from the project itself by any stretch of the imagination. I'll read you what he had to say earlier in the week. I thank President Trump for his leadership in establishing the Board of Peace, and I'm honored to be appointed to its executive board. It's a real privilege to work with Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and their outstanding team. I think this is a moment of hubristic horror for Tony Blair. I think if we were to speculate on what on earth he's motivated by, there has to be a very, very fat slice of self-importance. You want to mitigate the self-importance by the genuine belief that he can make a difference going forward. I'm afraid that ends up just sounding self-important. It is extraordinary that he is elected to put himself in this kind of company. And his legacy, already horribly tainted by the Iraq war and its aftermath, possibly about to receive another kicking, if it hasn't already, actually. I can't believe it. For the avoidance of doubt, I think it is absolutely disgusting that Tony Blair has elected to give respectability. Because out of all the lists, all those names, the only one who brings anything close to respectability, whatever you think of him, he's a very, very good prime minister of this country. And if it wasn't for the Iraq war, his legacy would be possibly uniquely good for an essentially peacetime prime minister. He's elected to add a veneer of respectability. Why do you think Trump mentioned him first? Why do you think Trump wanted to get... He wasn't even on the stage. Trump had to get Tony Blair out there. He's being used like a fig leaf. He's being used as a camouflage for corruption. And as far as I can tell, he has gone away. He's gone along with it. Heavily involved in the situation in Gaza, both before and after the so-called ceasefire. Committed to it genuinely. That's something I know. But the belief or the confidence that joining this ludicrous outfit would somehow enhance those hopes is something I can't currently get my head around. I hope I'm wrong, but at the moment it looks at the very least horrifically hubristic and at the very worst downright disgusting. 10:54 is the time. Gary and Calais up next, but let's just catch up with what AD in Bristol was in the middle of telling us. AD, where were we?
Yeah, sorry, James. Hope that's a bit better. Yeah, I think, to be perfectly honest, this is just it shows the arrogance of the current American administration, because I don't think it's just Trump. I think it's the likes of, like you say, Miller, Vance.
So why did they fold? I mean, we'll never know whether Miller or Vance or Rubio are upset or cross about this or think he's done the wrong thing, because they don't have the guts to say anything out loud that the boss would be unhappy with. But why do you think they folded? I don't know that they actually had to.
I think they gained it. I think they basically tested the water, and then basically the markets reacted. And as soon as the markets reacted, as soon as you had this European opposition to them, where, you know, leaders that they probably thought were a little bit wishy-washy,
yes,
or even the likes of Keir Starmer, yes, suddenly going, no, this is a line too far. And they looked at the markets, they gained, okay, so what would happen if we did put boots on the ground, if we did annex that territory? And they saw the market reaction, they saw the reaction from the opposition leaders, and they've caved. But the most frustrating thing about this is, you know, they will gaslight the public in America to claim this as a victory.
We'll talk to Simon today, probably tomorrow, and catch up with how this is playing out in America. I'm not even sure it's a massive story there. I don't even know if the Greenland thing is as big as the Gestapo tactics that are now being deployed on the streets of Minneapolis. More on that in the next hour. But the idea that it is all about the Benjamins is quite hard to resist, isn't it? So it's all, so they go hand in hand. The resistance, led by Carney effectively, but bolstered enormously by Starmer and Macron and others. The resistance creates the uncertainty. The uncertainty spooks the markets, as Liz Truss could explain to you. And the uncertainty in the markets spooks Donald Trump, who sees these numbers go back up again the minute he announces that he won't be introducing tariffs after all. So pathetic, absolutely pathetic, but still not something that was going to happen or would have happened had it not been for the resistance. Gary is in Calais. Gary, what's going on?
I think, James, don't look at it in isolation at the moment. Air Force One turned back on Tuesday. We're looking at their attempting to send in an American Airborne Division to Minnesota. Has it come to the point where the American military have said no? You've concentrated twice on Trump and the speeches that he gave. That man is in decline, both physically and mentally. Are we now looking at the vacuum that's going to cause? The American military have said, we are not prepared to go into a fellow NATO country. We're not even prepared to do it, to go into a NATO country. His backdown is now being caused by backwash at home. And are the people behind Trump, the likes of Hesketh, the likes of Vance, now beginning to circle to come into that vacuum?
Is America on the brink? Yeah, I mean, who knows? You've got Pete Hegseth insulting all of the military top brass men whose boots he is, and women, whose boots he is not fit to lay, sycophancy and public devotion to Donald Trump being the only qualification for high office in the United States now. But, not disobeying orders is at the heart of military philosophy, isn't it?
It's not disobeying orders. Remember, they follow the Constitution.
Yes.
They don't follow what Trump says. That's the thing you've got to remember. And we spoke about this about a year ago.
We did, yes.
When I turned around and said there was an American college that had done various things, scenarios, as to all the pieces falling into place. And they said in the last 3 months, those pieces are falling into place with a slightly different scenario. Exactly where we are today.
So, I mean, the intelligence is that if you were to press ahead with this plan, then you would have some form of mutiny on your hands.
I think...
You hope so, don't you? But then you look at history.
Almost to that point. And they've had it before. We're waiting for a Fort Sumter moment. I think that's pretty clear.
Waiting for a what?
Fort Sumter. Do you remember the point that sparked the Civil War? Everyone knew it was heading there until finally... The South fired actually on an American unit.
Not for the first time, Gary. You are educating me, and you're doing so in a very kind way, as if you presume I'd know what you were talking about. Fort Sumter rings a bell, but not on anything like the level or the scale that it should do, given the significance that you've just imbued it with. So I mean, we'll never know, will we? Maybe memoirs will be written in the future, but of course, if they're written by Caroline Levitt and her colleagues, they won't be worth the paper that they're printed on in terms of honesty, in terms of accuracy, or indeed in terms of trustworthiness. Gary, take care. We'll speak soon, I hope, coming up to 11 o'clock. Here is your seven members of the Board of Peace Executive Board, at which Trump sits at the top, and he will stay at the top even after he ceases to be president, which is why, I mean, it sticks out like a sore thumb. Tony Blair, former British Prime Minister. Jared Kushner, married Donald Trump's daughter. US Secretary of State Marco Rubio, dedicated sycophant. Ditto Steve Witkoff, the US Special Envoy to the Middle East. Then you've got a CEO of a financial firm, Apollo Global Management, called Mark Rowan, the president of the World Bank Group, AJ Banger, and Robert Gabriel, the US Deputy National Security Advisor. So all of whom are loosely describable as unduly sympathetic to Donald Trump's cause. But Tony Blair is there, providing so much cover for so much awfulness. You look at the countries that are there, you look at the countries that have signed up, the leaders that are on that stage today, and you marvel at the presence of the former British Prime Minister. And you find yourself, I'm speaking in the second person, I'm not sure why, I find myself drawn back to that story when I shouldn't be. No one should be. Everybody should be talking about the climb down and the humiliation. Not even 24 hours has passed. I hesitate to lecture fellow journalists because most of them are a lot more experienced and a lot more intelligent than I am. But surely everyone can see this is what he wants us to do. Who have we got on the Board of Peace? Well, no one really, mate. We've got a Saudi foreign minister. We've got the dictator from Egypt and then leaders of a bunch of countries that you've never heard of. If you have heard of them, you keep getting their names wrong, like Azerbaijan or whatever you called it during your last speech. And Trump, of course, says, I don't care whether or not there's any important people there. Well, and you've got Netanyahu as well. Oh, and Putin maybe, but he won't be on the stage. Because I don't think he's not allowed into Davos, is he? He'd get arrested immediately if he turned up in Davos. Wouldn't he? Would he? I don't know. Who knows anything anymore? But Donald Trump has been told, we've got nothing impressive, and it doesn't matter, because we're going to do it, and I'm the president, which means everyone will be talking about it, and the cameras will be focused, and the commentary will move on from yesterday's epic humiliation. And I don't know how you resist that. But I'm going to carry on trying. It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, President Trump has officially unveiled his so-called Board of Peace at a ceremony in Davos.
Everybody wants to be a part of it. The official formation of what is known as the Board of Peace.
The UK has opted not to take part in the signing because of concerns about Vladimir Putin's possible involvement. It was originally set to oversee Gaza's future, but Mr. Trump has since suggested it'll have a much wider purpose. Speaking in the past hour, he said he'll work with the UN despite repeatedly criticising the body.
I've always said the United Nations has got tremendous potential, has not used it, but there's tremendous potential with the United Nations, and I think the combination of the Board of Peace with the kind of people we have here, coupled with the United Nations, can be, you know, something very, very unique for the world. So for the world. This isn't United States. This is for the world.
The Prime Minister has welcomed Donald Trump's decision to drop the threat of tariffs over the future of Greenland. Sir Keir Starmer says allies can now find a way forward on Arctic security after a framework was agreed. The first illegal migrants have been moved into a military barracks in East Sussex. The group are staying at a former training site in Crowborough. It's part of efforts to cut the use of asylum hotels. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
The government says the first 27 migrants have been moved into these military barracks, which will eventually be scaled up to more than 500. They'll be single, adult, male migrants, all of whom came over here illegally on a small boat. They will stay here for up to 3 months while their claims are processed. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, says this is just the start of using cheaper sites in a bid to remove the incentives that drive some to come to Britain.
An investigation by LBC has found the AI chatbot Grok can provide instructions on how to make chemical weapons. The government says it's in direct talks with X to take immediate action to remove the content. X is yet to respond to LBC for a request for comment. And an amber weather warning for rains in place for parts of northeast Scotland until 6 o'clock tonight. Forecasters say parts of Angus, Perth and Kinross could see up to 3 inches of rain. Police Scotland's also warned of potential travel disruption. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 64 at 10,202. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many. Heavy rain continuing for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And with a new Seat Ibiza, you can roll young with a £2,000 Seat contribution. Or the new Seat Arona with a £3,000 Seat contribution. Both at 6.9% APR representative. Seat. Rolling young. With Solutions PCP. Ordered by 31st of March 2026. Indemnities may be required. Seat Finance.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 11 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, and a sort of a cavalcade of shame and humiliation unfolding in Davos as various crooks and criminals line up to, and I'm afraid Tony Blair's on that list. I don't know whether you consider him a crook or a criminal, but until something changes, his presence on the so-called founding executive council as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom continues to demur. The problem once again when you're talking about Donald Trump is that you can't talk about it using the vocabulary of history. This could be forgotten by Friday. I'm not even joking. I'm not even exaggerating. The Board of Peace could be this time next week. Oh, I remember that. He stopped talking about that again now. I feel I need to apologise again to the person I put in Idiot's Corner on Monday. The reason I got a bit snappy with you was because you suggested that we shouldn't be talking about any of this stuff instead. And that was a silly thing to say, because how can you not talk about moments of such epic importance like the potential invasion of Greenland? But you're right to say that an awful lot of this is clearly dedicated to distracting the world and at least the American public from the continued failure to publish the contents of the Epstein files. I think there's 2 million pages, is it, that are yet to be published. Donald Trump's name pops up an unimaginable amount of times in the tiny bits that they have actually released. So God knows how often he features and how in the main body of the documents of the archive. But you can't talk about this normally. So we could sit here now, and everyone else is going to do this, and I'm not criticising them, because I haven't worked out what the alternative is. But everybody else is going to, let's have a phone-in about the significance of Donald Trump's board. Should Tony Blair really be on the Board of Peace? Should Keir Starmer join the board? Is it better to be inside the room where it happens than outside criticising and critiquing? Because we don't know what else to do. It's the size of the players that determines the amount of the coverage. And the players don't come any bigger than the President of the United States of America. We're going to return briefly to Davos to see, are we to see what he says next?
Project, and it's a big one, but it's very doable. I said to Jared and Steve and what? Some of the other folks, including Larry Fink, and congratulations on the great success. The two of you have done a fantastic job. This is bigger and better than ever. We usurped some of your time for a very important reason, and you understand that better than anybody, and we appreciate that you're here very much. Thank you both very much. But I said that, this is a great location. It all begins, see, I'm a real estate person at heart, and it's all about location. And I said, look at this location on the sea. Look at this beautiful piece of property, what it could be for so many people. It'll be so, so great. People that are living so poorly are going to be living so well.
About to mention Kirstie also.
The location, that's the vision. They look out on the waters, and very few places are like it. So we put together a team that's outstanding, a team that's done it before. a team that I think has done tougher jobs, if you want to know the truth. We've done some tough jobs.
Just and, checking that it was still as ridiculous and as unhinged and as demented as it was when he started talking all that time ago. So, as I was explaining, we don't know what to do any more than we did halfway through the first term. What do you do when everything is upside down, when everything is being changed? How do you do journalism when the White House press secretary lies through her teeth on camera and nobody can call her a liar? Nothing's changed. So, anyway, for the avoidance of doubt, I would bet everything I own on the fact that this has been conceived in Donald Trump's warped brain as a way of distracting attention from what happened yesterday. I would bet everything I own on the fact that it is... Well, I would never be able to prove it, so you'd never be able to claim your winnings. John's written, get this demented clown off the radio. And who here is confident enough to say whether he's talking about Donald Trump or me? But the point is that a week from now, if I sat here, or a month from now, if I sat here and said to you... do you remember the Board of Peace? It'd be a bit like Nigel Farage's boycott of the BBC. These people just say things, and they do things, and Donald Trump can do them on the world stage, and then they will move on to something else, and they will forget about them. The Board of Peace may be already over, in all but name, because people may refuse to pony up $1 billion. Or they may decide to carry on doing what was happening at the beginning of this week, and to bend the knee, and we must try and keep him sweet. So here's $1 billion. Vladimir Putin's going to take it out of assets that were frozen as a punishment for illegally invading Ukraine. And you don't know what to do. So everybody else will be treating it like a normal event conducted by a normal president. And I'm not criticising them because I don't know what else to do, but I really feel the need to tell you that we shouldn't be treating this like a normal event conducted by a normal president. Having debates and guests and experts and even perhaps phone-ins on whether or not the UK should join, or whether or not Tony Blair has disgraced himself beyond all redemption, or whether or not it's a good idea, or whether or not it's a bad idea. It'd be like having a phone-in on whether or not Donald Trump was humiliated yesterday. Was it a good deal or a bad deal? Was it a deal or a no deal? I mean, it's such a ridiculous failure to recognise reality. But media doesn't know what to do. It's as if we've only got 10 tools in our toolbox, and Donald Trump presents us with a problem for which our tools are pointless, but we keep on trying to use the same tools. I don't know. Anyway, kudos to Frank for describing it as the FIFA Board of Peace. I like that. And I'll try and find the history of the bloke who just said, get this demented clown off the radio, so we could take a view on whether or not he was talking about me or talking about Donald Trump. And the question we are trying to answer is, what have we learned? How about adding to the mix? What should the media do? How much more proof do you need? How should this be reported? How should these moments be reported? These moments of dead cattery, these moments of distraction, these moments of disgrace. How should that? What are the tools that we need? We've got 10 tools in our toolbox and none of them are fit for purpose. Let's have a phone in about whether it's a good deal or a bad deal, a deal or no deal. Let's have a phone in about whether Tony Blair should be on. What do you do? How do the media do this? Stuart's in Edinburgh. Stuart, what have you learned?
I've learned, well, thanks for having me on, James. It's I love listening to you. It kind of feel like you helped me get over the fact I'm living in like a Trump weather system, wherever the else is getting blown off course. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
I do.
I consider myself a reasonably smart person, but I can't get to the core of what it is about Donald Trump that we can't get past. But I've had to think about it.
Were you listening yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, you were? Oh, crikey. Because I thought we did all right yesterday, but we didn't close it down, did we, by any stretch of the imagination?
It's difficult. Yeah. But I think the thing that it's taught us this week is how vulnerable modern democracies are to, like, bad faith actors.
Yes.
And particularly in this attention economy we live in. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we are vulnerable to it. But I thought... And this is, I don't know what you think about this, but I'm going to pitch it. Maybe the narrative needs to change to name the chaos without naming him. So rather than always reframing it back to Donald,
that's clever.
It's about, I don't know, but how you could talk about the problem but not the man. So
there's constant drama.
Can you though? Let's try.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at a couple of the. Let's go back over yesterday's speech using Stuart's theory of separating the man from the moment. Right. I love it. Yeah. I love it because I've got my begging bowl out. I don't know what to do. It's all very well saying, "Oh, you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that and you shouldn't do this," but I've got some clips. So we'll start with the one that we've already heard today. Okay.
Okay.
We'll start with the clip that we've already heard today, and I think this will challenge you, but some of the other clips may not. So here we go.
But I'm not sure that they'd be there for us if we gave them the call. Gentlemen, we are being attacked. We're under attack by such and such a nation. I know them all very well. I'm not sure that they'd be there. I know we'd be there for them. I don't know that they'd be there for us. So with all of the money we expend, with all of the blood, sweat, and tears, I don't know that they'd be there for us. They're not there for us on Iceland, that I can tell you. I mean, our stock market took the first dip yesterday because of Iceland. So Iceland's already cost us a lot of money.
Okay. How are we going to do that then? Stuart?
All right, God. okay. No, wait a minute. Okay, so maybe we just turn it around and go, maybe we just drown Donald Trump in love.
You can't abandon your theory. I'm going to get at least three more clips out of it. So here is and what you've done unintentionally is highlight how completely he inserts himself into the narrative. And again, that's something that speaks to my toolbox, speaks to the media's toolbox. We don't know what to do when events are so intrinsically and inextricably tied up with individual. So how on earth do you separate him?
It.
No, hang on. No, I just want to play this anyway because it's quite amusing. See, we're going to do the hilarity and now we're going to start diluting the horror, having just spent an hour criticising the ease with which the horror gets diluted by the hilarity. But this is interesting for a number of reasons.
But we saved Greenland and successfully prevented our enemies from gaining a foothold in our hemisphere. So we did it for ourselves also. And then after the war, which we won it big. Without us, right now you'd all be speaking German and a little Japanese, perhaps. After the war, we gave Greenland back to Denmark. How stupid were we to do that? But we did it. But we gave it back. But how ungrateful are they now?
The historical ignorance is incredible. But did you know Davos is a German-speaking town?
Yes.
German is one of the official languages of Switzerland, right?
Yeah.
Go on, then. Separate Donald Trump from that, then.
Right, okay. So I think there are two things. I think that the fact that we always pull him back into the orbit of conversation. In every single newspaper I looked at today, when I went into the store to buy my sandwich this morning, Donald Trump was slapped on the front of it. His face, which I'm sick of looking at, but I had to look at his face.
The size of the player determines the amount of the coverage. It's just how it always was.
But the other thing that's really missing from this, and you bring a lot of this in, and you make me laugh about it sometimes.
Good.
But maybe what we're missing is a bit of trying to pull a bit of humour back into this.
Laughing at him.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know he'd drive him mad, but maybe we just need to laugh at him and go, oh, come on, no.
I don't think the media can do that. You see, I can do that with your help, and we can point out that Davos is a German spit, but, and you can do it in a funny way. We'll have a look at windmills next. But I don't think that, you know, the very important newsreaders on the news at 10, I don't think Clive Myrie can start taking the mickey out of Donald Trump.
No.
I don't think that Chris Mason can. It's not an option.
Well, maybe then removing him from that narrative needs to be the way forward.
I mean, I'm putting it on my list, and I'm even drawing circles around it as well, because it would be a wonderful thing to do if we could somehow unite the media, the sensible media, not the Trump cheerleaders, not the Dick Littlejohns of this world, who would rather be led by a foreign dictator than by an elected British prime minister. But for the rest of people whose brains are still functioning, if you could all agree to do that, maybe don't say Trump anymore, say the President of the United States, it might have an effect. If you could all agree to start poking fun, it might, but you can't. That's the problem. you know, I was about to say my toolbox is tiny, but people might misread that. It's relatively small contribution to the conversation, pointing out that we are making a hideous mistake by talking about the border peace when we should be talking about what happened hours ago that was humiliating for him. But he's already won this battle. We're all talking about the thing he wants us to talk about and not the thing he was desperate that we didn't. And I don't know what the alternative is, which is why I'm taking Stuart's suggestion to the bank.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hi babe, what a day. Fancy staying in tonight instead? Mackie's calling my name and I saw you can get £5 off if you spend £20 on the app. So, you in? Of course you are. Okay, bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. Save £5 when you spend £20 on food and drink via delivery. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Service and delivery fees apply. Valid once per week, 1st to the 31st of January. Participating restaurants. Serving times apply.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
21 minutes after 11, Dave and Joseph up next. Before that, a little quiz for you. Which British political figure do you think might be most likely to have humiliated himself by essentially endorsing Donald Trump's illegal land grab of Greenland moments before Donald Trump abandoned it? I mean, of all the people in the British Parliament, let's say, all the MPs in the House of Commons, which one is most likely to have gone public with opposition to British interests, support for a plan that has been hailed by the Kremlin? With regard to NATO, perhaps you could describe it as parroting NATO talking, parroting Kremlin talking points. Which British politician would be most likely to have soiled himself yesterday by coming out in favour of the plan that Donald Trump was about to abandon? I didn't realise it was that easy.
I have no doubt that the world would be a better, more secure place if a strong America was in Greenland because of the geopolitics of the High North, because of the retreating ice caps, and because of the continued expansionism of Russian icebreakers, of Chinese investment. So, yes, would America owning Greenland be better for the world in terms of safety and stronger for NATO? It would. However, if you believe in Brexit, and if you believe in celebrating America's 250th birthday, if you believe in the nation state and not globalist structures, you believe in sovereignty. And if you believe in sovereignty, you believe in the principle of national self-determination. That's what you guys fought the British for. Your right of national self-determination. And you won. I agree strategically with the arguments that he makes.
There are no arguments, as we've already established. And Vladimir Putin, of course, remains the politician that Nigel Farage admires the most. Dave's in Shepherd's Bush. Dave, come on then. What have you got?
Well, I'm just going to change it a little bit, James, because I've got a complaint. Never in my lifetime have I had the desire to follow a speech by that man.
No, I apologise. I should have had a trigger warning.
Thank you so much. Just regarding the other individual, the President of America... Yes. to me, most of it, if not all of it, is irrelevant. So in the sense that the peace plan or the peace team, the peace process, you don't
pay
FIFA,
£1 million. It's the FIFA Board of Peace, mate.
But what it is, you don't pay £1 million. You just have to say you will. You turn up, you become
a billion,
part of the...
A billion.
Is it a billion?
Yeah,
you turn
a billion.
Up, we're going to pay £1 billion. You do the signing on ceremony. You sit back and adore the great leader. It's the same with the treaties, with the European Union. It's all a signing process. It's all a show. We've got deals with penguins on islands around the world. They're paying tariffs to us. It's amazing. But most of it, if not all of it, is covering up for whatever he needs covering up for in that moment, in that time. And it's just his narrative. I'm amazing. Everything I do is amazing. But it's just a show or a sham. And sadly, it's gone beyond. I mean, I know you've touched upon about we should laugh at him, but I think we've gone way past that. We tried that before in the early days.
Yeah.
When he came down the escalators, we looked, we laughed, and, you know, maybe the laughing's maybe for Jimmy Kimmel and Saturday Night Live.
Well, he obviously hates it. I mean, that proves how effective it is, doesn't it? It was Mark Twain, I think, that nobody can stand against laughter.
He does, but his base, I don't want to... But his base, they don't even acknowledge that. They just look at the dear leader. And I think we need to, like Mark Carney, I think he's doing an amazing job.
Yes.
We need to take the lead from him. Joking, stopping.
Well, I think we should listen to a bit, because I know other people have played it out this week, but I should play a few bits of Mark Carney's speech as well today. It's a mystery hour at 12 o'clock, thank God. Trump shut up before 12 noon, Dave. So for that, we can at least all be grateful. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I honestly, I'm not putting it on my list of predictions because, you know, I'm a little wary of tainting the perfection of that list in recent years. But I would not be surprised if the Board of Peace deflates like a withered old balloon and we never hear of it again sooner rather than later.
But everything he's part of deflates like an old withered balloon. Everything. And he just moves on to the next one.
Yes.
He just moves on and he keeps... Something's bigger and amazing. It's great. His casinos were amazing and great. His property empire. Everything he touches is amazing and great. But when you just scratch a little bit below the surface... There's nothing there. There's no substance. All of it is just this, whatever you want to call it, imaginary scam or fake.
Keep moving forward. Keep blowing up new balloons. That balloon's withered. That balloon's popped. Blow up a new balloon. And you know, what are we, 6 years, 5 years in to two terms? And we still haven't got a clue. I remember getting despair when the New York Times and others would fail to call lies lies, and they'd call them untruth, and they'd defend it on the grounds that, well, maybe he didn't realise what he was saying was lying. He said, it doesn't matter, but we don't know what to do. The vocabulary, the toolbox is still inadequate. Do you want to put a date on it, Dave? Not a bet, just a date. When do you think we might reasonably report that we've heard no mention at all of the Board of Peace now for a month? When
April
do you
think? April the 1st.
26 minutes after 11. Top of the class. Top-ish of the class. Because I think Frank's suggestion that we should call this the FIFA Board of Peace is vying at least for the top spot. Aggie Chambray has joined us because British politics is still going on. And this is potentially quite a significant story, Aggie.
This is potentially...
Let me introduce you properly. LBC's deputy political editor.
Thank you very much, James.
Congratulations.
Thank you, James. This is potentially an absolutely massive story. So Andrew Gwynn, who used to be a Labour MP, he was a health minister. He had the whip suspended in February last year because he wrote comments like he hoped a pensioner would die on a private WhatsApp group. Those comments came to light. He had the whip suspended. And there's long been rumours that he might abandon his seat, basically... resign from his seat, and who might take that seat instead. And I say take that seat, there's many, many, many hurdles, which I'll come to in a second,
yes,
to getting that seat. But one, Andy Burnham, who at the moment is the mayor of Greater Manchester. And today it has been revealed by the Times, and we have also been told that Andrew Gwynn could stand down as early as this afternoon. So basically, according to Labour MPs, senior Labour MPs I have spoken to, they have said that he could be being offered a pension settlement because of ill health, which would basically see him out for the rest of this Parliament. And so he could be making an announcement as early as today, potentially tomorrow. I actually called his constituency office. They didn't know anything about it. We've also contacted him for comment. He has not come back. Parliament have said they will come back with a statement. But the news today, Andrew Gwynn, who is was the Labour MP, still holds a seat for Gorton and Denton, is likely, according to Labour MPs I have spoken to as well as the Times, stand down as early as this afternoon.
So the selection for the new candidate, and there's no foregone conclusion, of course, that they would, well, he would slide straight into the House of Commons. There wouldn't be any by-election, but the selection for the new MP would be a matter for the local, for the CLP, for the constituency Labour Party.
Yeah, and there actually would be a by-election. So basically the process would be, if indeed...
If it's a medical retirement,
yes,
then there'd be a by-election.
Exactly, right, James. Okay. So basically the process would be Andrew Gwynn resigns, and then Andy Burnham, the Mayor of Greater Manchester, could potentially put his hat into the ring. Because he is a mayor, he would basically have to apply for sort of special dispensation to even be a candidate for that by-election. That's a panel of seven people. People on that panel are kind of union people, also includes the deputy Labour leader, who of course is Lucy Powell, who people think actually probably would vote him through. If he then got through that bit, and people I've spoken to think he probably would get through that bit, but they're not completely sure.
Right.
Then it's the more difficult bit. This is then a panel of five people. This is members of the NEC, members of the regional NEC in the area too. And that'll be five people. And they will then decide the shortlist. And then the shortlist will then be voted on by the local party. So it's by no means
NEC
easy.
Approval as well?
NEC, yeah. People say potentially
no. So there's no,
no
actual reason except, not mischief, but speculation to link these two events at the moment. Gwynne's medical retirement is not going to have been conjured up as a way of letting Andy Burnham into Parliament. But how can you resist the temptation, given also that it's in Manchester, to suggest that this offers an opportunity to Andy Burnham?
And there's long been talk about those two being in discussions. But I think the point that I should make is that members of the NEC on that second part, on that five-member board who will be interviewing him, they will argue, as well as I think potentially people on that seven-person board, the first board, might argue as well, that it is would be a terrible time for Andy Burnham to stop being the mayor of Greater Manchester, and he would have to immediately give up that Greater Manchester mayoralship. And also they would be worried that Reform UK, who came second in the general election in that seat last time, might win that seat in a by-election. They'd also be worried about basically the Greater Manchester mayor no longer being Labour too. So people I've spoken to on the NEC, as well as people who are senior in the Labour Party, think that it is absolutely not a foregone conclusion that Andy Burnham would be on the ballot paper in that by-election should he choose to run.
Watch this space. Would we expect a comment from first, Gwynn or Burnham?
I think I expect Gwynn first, and then I'm sure we'll hear from Burnham if indeed
he will rule himself out or rule himself in.
I suspect he might rule himself in.
Do you?
That would be my prediction, but I may well be wrong. I've been wrong before.
And that becomes the beginnings of a potential leadership challenge to Keir Starmer. There's no way Andy Burnham wants to go back into the House of Commons and not have a tilt at the big job.
That's absolutely the significance of this story, because I think people around him, lots of Labour MPs who are very pro Andy Burnham, have basically been waiting and hoping that Andy Burnham can get a seat in Westminster so that he could run, challenge the Prime Minister, which of course he would need 80 named MPs to do so. But people on the soft left of that party who are supporters of Andy Burnham think if he were to get that far, and as I've laid out, it's not simple, then they think he might well be able to challenge Keir Starmer.
It is 11:32. Our Deputy Political Editor, Aggie Chambray, there with the breaking news that the former Labour MP, the MP for Gorton and Denton in the North West, sacked as a health minister, still an MP. Though he had the whip removed. I'll shut up now and go to the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has unveiled his Board of Peace at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The UK has opted not to take part in today's signing because of concerns about Vladimir Putin's possible involvement. LBC understands the former Labour Health Minister Andrew Gwynn is to stand down as an MP. It follows reports last year that he was considering leaving his seat to clear a path for Greater Manchester's Mayor Andy Burnham to seek a return to Parliament. And the first group of illegal migrants have been moved into a former barracks in East Sussex. The Home Office says it's scaling up the use of military sites as part of efforts to close asylum hotels. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many today. Heavy rain for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. from Real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung der Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Beautiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see beautifulguthealth.com/radio.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Ha, love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance. Mm-hmm.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/clean energy.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:35. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's been one of those weeks where we've only really discussed one story, with a brief diversion earlier in the week into the Beckham's family local difficulties, which was actually really interesting and surprisingly powerful, because, of course, it's all about the question I ask you and whether or not you're minded to answer it. So we had a 40-minute diversion, and then yesterday, of course, Stuart Lee joined us to lighten the mood. So I think that Mystery Hour at 12 noon today will be particularly welcome. An injection of levity and possibly even some illumination, and no politics whatsoever. But until then, we continue to try to address the madness, to try to make sense of the insensible. And not for the first time, we are enlisting the help of Phillips O'Brien, the Professor of Strategic Studies at the University of St. Andrews. I mean, he gives a speech last night, he gives a speech today. I used to think fact checks were powerful instruments, Phillips. I used to think that, you know, and they still are for most world leaders, most public figures. Here's a fact check. You said Iceland when you meant Greenland. Here's your... White House press secretary saying, no, you didn't. And there'll be enough people ready to believe that he didn't, even as they see and hear him say that he did. So I don't know what role fact checks play in this ludicrous universe, but I wonder if you could run through the eight wars he's just claimed yet again to have ended.
It's actually not always clear what the eight are, because they're so, you know, all over the place. I mean, let's go for the ones that seem most obvious, and then go to the ones that seem to be the most detached from reality. Now, he claims to have settled Israel and Gaza. Okay. Now, is that settled? Is it not? You know, what the hell is going on there is still very much up for debate. But according to Trump, he has settled that war. And you know, even though, of course, in many ways, one of his prime victory conditions was to get Hamas out, but Hamas actually is still there. Yes. So, you know, by what criterion he is claiming that is still an odd one.
Well, and not to deploy undue levity, that would come as news to the families of the 11 people that were killed in Gaza by Israeli forces yesterday, and the two killed in South Lebanon.
Yes, and it is hardly a peaceful situation. Mm. It is a heavily militarized situation. He also seems to have claimed to have brought peace between Israel and Hezbollah.
Right.
You know, which is really strange because Hezbollah still exists. I mean, it was heavily damaged by the Israelis, but it's not like there's been any peace treaty or agreement between the two, that Hezbollah is still there. But that's one of his claims. And then finally, also, if we have the Israel-Middle East one, Israel and Iran, even though the United States is presumably or at least possibly preparing more airstrikes against Iran, Trump says he brought peace between Israel and Iran. So you know, those are three separate wars that he claims to have solved, all of which are actually, you would say, in different stages of ongoing activity.
Well, and nothing's really, I mean, October the 7th notwithstanding, the ebb and flow of conflict has been in place in all three of these theatres for decades. So essentially, he finds himself, either by accident or design, in what could be loosely described as a lull, and he claims that it's a ceasefire that he is responsible for.
You're being logical again, James. Stop it.
It'll never catch
Stop it. He has a rich internal monologue. And in that rich internal monologue, he is making the U.S. government a vehicle to get across the view he has, not the view of the outside. So I'm sure he's being told, yes, peace. You have a Gaza peace board. Yeah. And that's enough for peace. So those are three that we know about. Then we get into the international ones outside of Israel and the Middle East, which are even a bit wackier. I mean, there's Azerbaijan and Armenia. Now, what happened is Azerbaijan defeated Armenia in a war. And Trump doesn't even actually know the countries. He often mistakes.
Azerbaijan. Yeah. It's been renamed. It's been rebranded. Sponsored by, yeah. I don't know, Pepsi Cola. Is it Azerbaijan that he says normally, or Abba?
He sometimes confuses countries in different regions. But Azerbaijan, Armenia,
the president, Iceland, Greenland, Schmeissland. Who cares? It doesn't matter, this stuff.
But actually, what happened there, as I said, the Azerbaijanis defeated the Armenians on the battlefield and took back all of Nagorno-Karabakh. So it wasn't that he ended the war. There was a military result.
It's brilliant, isn't it? So if someone could have beaten him to it. But again, not to make light of bloodshed and misery, but, you know, they win a war, and I turn up and go, I did this. Yes, another ceasefire for me, Donald Trump. And just don't mention the people who've given their lives both winning and losing the war that's just ended entirely independently of any intervention you might have made. It suits them, does it, to pretend that he played a role?
Well, it certainly suits the Armenians, who are desperate for U.S. support. I mean, that's the thing is, what he does is he takes advantages of different parties to the conflict. Perhaps that's been most noticeable in the border dispute between Pakistan and India. Mm. Now, he claims to have settled that. India and Pakistan had exchanges of fire, perhaps some dogfights, or at least aerial combat a few months ago. The Pakistanis wanted U.S. support at that time. So the Pakistanis actually went and said, oh yes, Trump solved this. The Indians said, that's bonkers, you're mad. You know, this was not solved by the United States. This was solved bilaterally between, or temporarily solved. Again, I don't think anyone believes the Pakistani-Indian border is now permanently peaceful. But the Indians have said, you know, this is crazy. This is something that we did with the Pakistanis. The United States played no role in it. And Trump, by the way, got so angry at the Indians saying this that he put extra tariffs on them. So that this is how the inner monologue comes around. And he said, no, I solved this war. And the Indians said, no, you didn't. He's like, well, you're going to have more tariffs till you say what I want you to say. But in his mind, and the Pakistanis nominated him
for the Nobel Peace Prize.
And that's how he gets. I mean, he gets often the weaker side in a struggle to say, yes, Trump, you are the great man because we want U.S. support. So, I mean, that's probably the strangest one. And it shows, I think, the reality of how he acts. But another one quite similar is Thailand, Cambodia, that they've had an ongoing border dispute for decades. And there was some artillery fire. That artillery fire ended. The Cambodians, who are the weaker side, Thailand's considerably stronger, basically went to Trump to say, yes, you're responsible, please help us. And then they nominated him for the Nobel Prize as well. The ties have been not so forthcoming, one might say. But they have to be careful because Thailand's also a military ally of the USA. So a lot of these countries are careful in what they say because they they don't want to get the US upset. So how many is that? We have the three Israel ones. We have Azerbaijan, Armenia, India, Pakistan.
Let's do my favorite. Let's do my favorite. Kosovo and Serbia.
Yeah, which hasn't actually. This, I think, is referring to his first term.
Right.
I didn't know about that war.
I missed that.
Yeah, war. I mean that war, of course, hasn't been settled. It's still there. But I think he's referring to the fact that there had been some flare-ups of the fighting between Serbia and Kosovo in his first term, and that's sort of a carryover.
Right.
Because. I mean, there's been very little change in his second term now in Kosovo, Serbia, but the Serbs flatter him every once in a while. The Kosovans have, need Western military support, so they both try to appeal to him in that. But he hasn't solved it. That's still there. I mean, that goes back to the 1990s.
And finally, I think the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda.
Which is flared up. I think even he admitted, that seemed to flare back up. After he settled it, that seemed to flare up again. And again, that dispute's gone back for decades.
And finally, Robert, finally, Phillips, and I thank my listener, Robert, for this. What about the war between Camberwick Green and Castle Grayskull?
Well, that one is probably one that, he can settle that next week.
Oh, you say that. Thank you. That was brilliant. Just tell us what you make of the events of the last 24 hours, if you can, if you want to.
It actually should be the lesson people should not have to learn but need to. What the Europeans did is not, first of all, you don't give in to Trump ever. You don't kiss his butt, if I can say that on radio.
You just did.
But on the other hand, you don't yell at him. You just use the leverage you have to put him in a more difficult situation. And the European states did that over Greenland. And that actually got a result because he had to back down. That might be temporary. We have to be very careful.
Of course.
This might not be, he might come back. But the Europeans used the leverage that they had quite effectively. They put more troops into Greenland. Trump does not want to shoot European troops. Believe me, that will play very badly in the USA. The Danes and Swedes started selling American treasury bills or some other pension companies. The United States does not want that. This is a real no-no.
Was that the key bit of leverage? Was that, do you think, the most probably, if you had to single one bit out, you've got European unity, you've got strong rhetoric, as you say, you've got that lovely tightrope walk between appeasing and resisting, but actually when the Benjamins start moving, then his ears prick up.
Yeah, I think that, and also the fact that it's polled really badly in the USA, even amongst Republicans.
That's what I thought.
That he on the whole doesn't care about what his non-base thinks. Mm. But even his base seemed rather uncomfortable with the idea of the U.S. attacking Greenland. So it all added together. And it was because the Europeans stopped kissing up to him and actually took positions that made it uncomfortable and difficult to him. So he only either could cross the Rubicon and do something that was politically really unpopular.
I like
or
this.
He had to find back down.
Do you want to give your Substack a quick plug?
Yeah, I wrote a piece about on my Substack yesterday where I sort of went through, this morning, where I went through, Trump being put in this uncomfortable situation and that Europe needs to do this now regularly. That's the key. And that's
will it learn?
Which has not done it terribly well.
No, will Europe learn the lesson? So if people just type Phillips O'Brien into Substack, they'll find yours, will they?
Yes, they will.
There we go. Professor of Strategic Studies at the University of St. Andrews and one half of what Catherine has very kindly decided to describe as the fabulous O'Brien boys, which will most certainly never catch on. It's 11:47.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
President Trump yesterday doing what he does best, making news at home.
President Trump standing before the world and putting it on notice. He's not backing off at all in terms of his ambition to take control of Greenland.
And away.
Well, let's get back to the breaking news now that Donald Trump says a framework deal has been reached over Greenland.
Look what he's achieved. He's possibly on the verge of doing a deal that will give him maybe a Cyprus Trump-style deal for Greenland. In a world now where you have dictators like Putin, President Xi, Kim Jong-un and all the others just doing what the United Kingdom does, which is continually referring to international law, isn't going to cut it.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise in terms and conditions.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 10 to 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I want to do something a little different now, and I think it's really important, and I wish I didn't. A, feel that we have to do it, and B, think that it's really important. I'm going to read you a report from today's news, and it takes us back to the United States of America, specifically to Minneapolis, or at least to Minnesota. Liam Ramos, a preschooler, and his father were taken into custody while in their driveway. The superintendent of the school district in Columbia Heights, a Minneapolis suburb, said at a press conference on Wednesday. Liam, who had recently turned 5, is one of 4 children in the school district who have been detained by federal immigration agents during the Trump administration's enforcement surge in the region over the last 2 weeks, the district said. Liam and his father had just arrived home when they were detained, according to Zena Stenvik, the superintendent, who said she drove to the home when she learned of the detentions. When she arrived, Stenvik said the father's car was still running and the father and son had already been apprehended. An agent had taken Liam out of the car, led the boy to his front door and directed him to knock on the door, asking to be let in, quotes, in order to see if anyone else was home, essentially using a 5-year-old as bait, the superintendent said in a statement. Stevnik said another adult living in the home was outside during the encounter and had pleaded to take care of Liam so the boy could avoid detention, but was denied. Liam's older brother, a middle schooler, came home 20 minutes later to find his father and brother missing, Stevnik said. Two school principals from the district also arrived at the home to offer support. So that is Donald Trump's ICE officers operating in a suburb of Minneapolis this week. I think you will be able to work out where the next thing that I'm going to read to you comes from, but I'm not going to tell you until I have finished. Terrible things are happening outside. At any time of night and day, poor, helpless people are being dragged out of their homes. They're allowed to take only a knapsack and a little cash with them, and even then they're robbed of these possessions on the way. Families are torn apart. Men, women and children are separated. Children come home from school to find that their parents have disappeared. Women return from shopping to find their houses sealed, their families gone. And that is from The Diary of a Young Girl by Anne Frank. The first piece, if you're just joining us halfway through or if you missed the introduction, is a report from yesterday's newspapers on events in Minnesota this week. And if you can tell me the difference between those two descriptions, one happening in the United States this week and one happening in Amsterdam during the Holocaust, then you are a wiser person than me. I'm just going to leave you to dwell upon that as we return our attention to Donald Trump, the man responsible for the federal immigration agents who undertook the behaviour that I have just described to you, behaviour that looks increasingly like the conduct described by Anne Frank in that extraordinary book, The Diary of a Young Girl. Back to the question of what we've learned this week, what we can possibly do with that information, and whether anything will make any difference to anything. Noel's in Oxford. Noel, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Good to speak to you. I really had to call in today. I listen to you in the background when I work from home. I don't always get a chance to speak to you, but I just had to call in for my sanity today. I hear you talking, and I think you're the only show that will actually talk truth to the kind of nation, really. You don't hear in any of the media or anywhere else about, you know, a sociopath who's running America. But it occurred to me that, you know, I'm of an age group that's probably older than you and grown up in the 70s. There was always a kind of a feel that, you know, you were in safe hands.
Yeah.
Bad things happened. Whatever they were, dictators came, but there was always politicians to speak up. There was always people in the media. There was a collective kind of, you know, goodness that spoke out. And it's just silenced. And I was kind of hoping that maybe, I'm kind of tripping over my words here.
Hey, take your time.
Yeah. I was thinking, for the first time ever, you know, even our own Prime Minister, who's been sycophantic, the royal visit, Europe, everything, they stood up collectively. And he backed down, but it wasn't a lone voice out there, just one person. It was, it was a continent of Europe that went enough. And I just wonder, will it start a movement? I mean, I remember the protests against Vietnam, tens of thousands coming to the White House, burning the flag and saying, not in our name. And nobody's doing it. Now, is it just money? I mean, would it kill us as a nation to say enough? I mean, it'll hurt us financially. I mean, you know, whatever, tariffs. But someone, a bit like the Canadians, they have, excuse my words, but the balls to go, you know, this guy is mad. He's bringing in Putin, a mass murdering dictator. Forget what he does to his own people.
Yeah.
And why isn't the press screaming? I mean, what does Putin have on him? There has to be something.
The Epstein files, all of the things that we are being constantly distracted from. But
he's scared of those two things.
But we're also distracted from what happened yesterday. So it's why I have a really love-hate relationship with Dead Cat, because it's clearly true that he is distracting from the things you've just mentioned. But he is today distracting from yesterday.
But you keep repeating it, James. You keep coming back to it. And you say it's a distraction, but release the Epstein files. What has Putin got on you? I mean, it's so blatantly clear. And, you know, I hear your callers calling in. I speak to people in my local. I speak to people in work. And they feel like, you know, it's insane. But is it because our generation had it easier in terms of things were calmer? There was always someone, you mentioned that great president in character, with integrity and everything that goes with that. But are we all just too scared, too quiet? Are we all...
I don't think it's that. There is some of that, obviously. Rutger Bergman's new book, which is brilliant, talks about how in times like this, and of course he draws upon events that I touched on a moment ago when I was reading from Anne Frank's book, the resistance is there, but it's never focused. You need people to stand up and provide rallying points for resistance. That happened during the Vietnam War, of course, but when body bags are coming home from a foreign country, that's a very different proposition to a population.
Of course. Make it the example. There's a great history of rebellion in America. I mean, come on. I mean, it's in their DNA, and yet, you know, you've just been, you know, your prelude to your next chat about what these, you know, stormtroopers or ICE are doing. Even America seems to be, I don't know whether in awe or, you know, there's just no one. I'd love Keir Starmer to just come up onto stage and say, he's insane, we know it.
I still don't know that we can afford to. It is eventually money, isn't it? But it's British workers, it's British manufacturers, it's British jobs that suffer from tariffs. There is no trade-off that's clear enough to sell to the British public. And remember, we've still got the bloke who's number one in the polls in this country is a Donald Trump fanboy. Nigel Farage, so it doesn't make political sense for Keir Starmer to do it either, although it would be nice to see integrity detached from self-interest sometimes.
I can't even describe what I'm trying to get across. I mean, first of all, fundamentally, all these madmen eventually die, and the great thing is they think they won't, but they all die, so that's a positive thing. And, you know, they say anthills grow and castles crumble. You know, things will change.
I wish they'd hurry up and grow, those anthills. I don't personally wish death upon anybody, really, with perhaps one or two exceptions, but I understand the figure of speech that you deploy. And I think part of the answer to your question is the one that I've been regurgitating endlessly today, which is the idea that we don't know what the tools are to deal with this. If the journalists don't know how to report it, how on earth are the politicians supposed to know how to stop it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Donald Trump has unveiled his so-called Board of Peace at a ceremony in Switzerland. The UK's opted not to take part in today's signing because of concerns about Vladimir Putin's possible involvement. The group was originally set out to oversee Gaza's future, but speaking in Davos, Mr. Trump suggested it'll have a much wider purpose.
We are in a position to have an incredible chance. I don't even call it a chance. I think it's going to happen. To end decades of suffering, stop generations of hatred and bloodshed, and forge a beautiful, everlasting, and glorious peace for that region and for the whole region of the world, because I'm calling the world a region. The world is a region. We're going to have peace in the world.
The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper's insisted Denmark's sovereignty over Greenland is unchanged and unwavering. President Trump announced last night that he'd agreed a framework of a future deal for security in the Arctic region. The US also dropped threats of tariffs on countries which have been resisting Washington's demands to take over Greenland. Details of said framework are yet to be released. LBC understands the former Health Minister Andrew Gwynne is to stand down as an MP. The independent member for Gorton and Denton had the Labour whip removed last year after sending offensive WhatsApp messages. Mr Gwynne has previously denied considering leaving his seat to clear a path for Greater Manchester's mayor to return to Parliament. LBC's deputy political editor, Aggie Chambray, says it could reignite a Labour leadership challenge.
Lots of Labour MPs who are very pro-Andy Burnham have basically been waiting and hoping that Andy Burnham can get a seat in Westminster so that he could run, challenge the Prime Minister, which of course he would need 80 named MPs to do so. But people on the soft left of that party who are supporters of Andy Burnham think if he were to get that far, then they think he might well be able to challenge Keir Starmer.
To bring you some breaking news, the local government secretary, Steve Reid, has told MPs that 29 council elections scheduled for May this year will be postponed as part of the government's reorganisation plans. We'll bring you more on this as we get it. First, asylum seekers have been moved into a military barracks in East Sussex. 27 people are staying at the former Crowborough training site while their asylum claims are processed. It's part of plans to cut the use of asylum hotels. And Liz Hurley has started giving evidence in her legal action against the publisher of the Daily Mail. The actress is among high-profile figures who say they were victims of unlawful information gathering. Associated Newspapers denies the claims at the High Court in London. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 20 at 10,158. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many today. Some heavy rain continuing for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. It is. Flipping heck, who forgot? Hands up. Hands up if you forgot briefly. I know I mentioned it half an hour ago, but half an hour is a long time in politics. Hands up if you forgot that Mystery Hour was coming up next and you were wondering how on earth we were going to be able to continue talking about Donald Trump while simultaneously reflecting that we shouldn't be talking about the thing that we're talking about. We should be talking about the thing that we should be talking about, but we're not talking about because we're talking about the thing that we shouldn't be talking about. All of which adds up to one very large reason to breathe a huge sigh of relief at the fact that it is that time of week again. If you're new to this, you're in for a treat. If you've got a question, remember, you get a better chance of getting it on the board if I have forgotten to give you a heads up at 1 minute to 12 than you do when I remember to give you a heads up at 1 minute to 12. And if you are new to it, then you should probably know that this is the only hour of the week in which I guarantee laughter. I was going to say smiles then, but that would be deflation. It's laughter that I guarantee. What happens is this. People ring in with a question, any old question, a mystery, a riddle, a conundrum, an enigma, something that must have an answer, but you're dashed if you know what it is, and the number you read, and ring, and be quick, because if you do it now, you'll get a phone line, 0345 606 0973. And then you ask the question, and then somebody else rings in and provides the answer. And it's that simple. If you provide the answer, or the question, actually, whoever makes my favourite contribution of the week has a chance of winning a Mystery Hour game, either a Mystery Hour board game or the Mystery Hour Travel Edition, which is not technically a board game because it fits in your pocket, but which is guaranteed to provide hours of fun. My decision is final. I pick that. You can find out the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. You can find out more about the game itself by going to mysteryhour.co.uk. But to get the rubric in place, you send in, or you ring in with a question, somebody else rings in with an answer, and between those two moments, the magic happens. Genuinely. And we all come away, especially me, we all come away better educated, better informed, and more illuminated than we were at the beginning. What I can't guarantee is that you'll be able to hold on to the information that you've learned. Unfortunately, there are times when I am asked what came up on Mystery Hour at about 1:10 on a Thursday afternoon, and I can't remember. That's not a sign of age either, because it was true 15 years ago when we started doing this. It's just the way brains work. But then sometimes you'll learn something on Mystery Hour that you find yourself, like the origins of the game of darts, for example, that you find yourself unearthing in company to the shock and amazement of everybody around you. It equips you beautifully. And of course, there's a whole archive of podcasts as well where you can learn all manner of things going back in history, going back through the archive. So lbc.co.uk for the terms and conditions. Mysteryhour.co.uk for the game if you're not lucky enough to win one, and you can still get hold of either the original big box board game or the brand spanking new It's in a Tin Travel Edition. And I think that's it. And a prize on the way to whoever provides my favourite contribution of the week. 7 minutes after 12. Should we go? Should we do it? Should we start? Mark's in Stockport. Mark, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Mark.
So I was watching telly recently,
And you see people sometimes throw things into the rivers or the oceans, maybe disposing of evidence like a gun or something like that. And I wondered, what do they actually do with the props? Do they go and collect them? Do they let them sink? Are they made from something that, you know, disposes of itself in the water? What happens to these props that are being thrown into water?
I mean, what are the options?
Man with a net.
Maybe gun on a line. I can't imagine that they retrieve them. I mean, it's going to depend, isn't it? All right, we'll find a props master. Someone will come on and tell us, but it won't be a definitive answer because they'll say, "Oh no, we got that one back out again because it was valuable." But we leave the other side. And they probably have more than one anyway because of continuity. They might have to do the scene again, and they've just tossed the gun into the sea, so they're not going to have to wait for a frogman to get it out again. They're going to have another gun, aren't they? I imagine.
Yeah, but does that mean then, in some cases, we've just got a load of props at the bottom of wherever, rivers
or
oceans?
This is the bit about your question that confuses me, the sea's a big old thing, so's a river. Canals are full of all sorts of gunk. There's some lads near me that go magnet fishing quite regularly, and they pull some amazing things out of the Grand Union Canal, including wartime weapons, actually. So, that's the bit I don't understand, is that you're worried that there's some sort of stockpile of redundant props, as if everything is filmed by the same bit of water.
Well, not necessarily, but I find that most companies have obligations on them not to litter and pollute and things like that.
Yeah, okay.
And so I would have assumed things into water would be covered by that.
No, we'll see. It's on the board. But as I say, if we go definitive on this, I'll give you the money myself. For the very simple reason that there won't be one answer to every single prop that's tossed into every single body of water in the history of filmmaking. But if you do leave them there, that would qualify as littering. So maybe they get a dispensation or they have got some. I don't know. That's why it's a good question. A better question than I originally realised, which is why we all love Mystery Hour. Thank you, Mark. 0345 6060 973. Alan is in Aveyron.
Aveyron, James, yes.
Alan is in France. Alan, question or answer?
It's a question, sir.
Marvellous.
The shipping forecast for the British Isles.
Yes.
If I can't sleep,
same.
I listen to it late at night in the morning.
Yes.
And as you know, they list the wind speeds from 1 to 12, 12 being the severest. But I've been a little bit mystified by the fact that, listening carefully, they say 4, 6 to 8 represents a gale, but 3 to 5 they announce as a cyclone. Now, a cyclone, by any stretch of imagination, is far fiercer than a gale. And even on the Beaufort scale, it says that 3 to 5 is a breeze. I just don't understand why they say a cyclone is more powerful than a gale on the shipping forecast.
I love this question. Are we 100% sure that you're right, that we've got the language 100% correct?
I am. I've listened to it repeatedly, and I assure you
you're thinking of almost like a tornado, are you, with a cyclone? You're thinking of a...
A cyclone.
I think cyclone might have more than one meaning.
It might, and I can only think that, I mean, if you look at the Beaufort scale, the definition of 3 to 5 on the Beaufort scale is a breeze, and certainly...
You shouldn't be worried about that.
A breeze is much lighter than a cyclone.
Well, you can have that for nothing. That's a statement. That's not an opinion. That's counting. All right, it's on the board. So why is a cyclone lower than a gale on the shipping forecast? When
exactly right, sir.
Okay, I like that. How much do you reckon you could do from the beginning to the end of all of the sort of south at Syria, north at Syria? Could you do it? Because if I'm struggling...
No, I couldn't at all, because I tend to doze off in between.
Yes,
I know that
that's what it's for.
It goes around the coast in a circular fashion, finishing up in Scotland.
No, I always think, it's a weird thing to think, but I always wonder whether one day I'll try and learn it. Because I do poems when I can't sleep very well. I try and remember poems that I've memorised. And if that doesn't work, then I'll turn the radio back on. And it's usually the shipping forecast that is there or thereabouts. 11 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning is the one where you know you've got problems.
Exactly right. Can I ask you something? Do you ever remember the wonderful Black Books episode with Tamsin Gray getting overexcited listening to those shipping forecasts.
I do, and it was so beautifully observed because it has such a unique place in the sort of national consciousness, doesn't it? Because of these reasons, becoming cyclonic is the phrase I'm hearing in my mind now, in my mind's memory.
Oh, right.
Becoming so. Right, we'll find out. I like this question, and I like anything. Oh, a bit of trivia for you.
Yes, sir.
Who composed Sailing By?
Oh, now there I have to give in there.
It's a great. I know his surname. I'm 100% sure on his surname. I may have misremembered his Christian name, his first name, but I give you Ronald Binge.
Ronald Binge, what a name.
What a name, eh? Ronald.
You could binge out on that, didn't
yes,
you?
Don't spoil it with rubbish dad jokes. Ronnie Binge to his mates, I think. Ronald Binge, we love it. 30 minutes after 12 is the time. If I've got that wrong, I'm not even going to own up. Graham is in St. Boswell's. So we go from Aveyron in France to St. Boswell's on Scotland. Graham, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
I've recently had my driveway tarmac, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and already there are tiny plants that are managing mini weeds managing to pull through it. How did they do it? Can we draw parallels in terms of Trump and the rest of the world? Can we all be the weeds trying to pull through?
The weeds in the tarmac. The weeds in the tarmac. Yeah.
How does that happen?
I don't want to cast aspersions upon the horny-handed sons of toil or sons of the soil that did your driveway, but they should have put down some thicker plastic, I think, before
they don't automatically put plastic down. It happens everywhere,
does it? Well, I've seen it happen. Of course it does, but yeah, I didn't think it was going to happen after such a short period of time.
Well, no, it does, and I just don't understand how these tiny little, you know, weedy plants have the strength to pull through.
I'm with you. Because I mean, what is the strength involved if it can? Because we couldn't punch our way through tarmac.
Of course not.
If we were buried underneath it. Not that I want anyone to try this at home. Can a weedy little weed do it? Literally a weedy little weed. I like it. You're on, and it'll be a good one. This, as it will be obvious and yet fascinating at the same time, I suspect. So there you go. What happens to the TV or film props that are tossed into the water? And staying on a maritime theme, when you listen to the shipping forecast, which is an odd thing to do when Ian Payne is on the radio, but if you do find yourself listening to the shipping forecast instead of Payne at 5 o'clock in the morning, then how come a cyclone is apparently lower than a gale? Makes no sense. And how can a tiny little weed push its way through several inches of thick and heavy tarmac, or indeed concrete? It's 12:15.
LBC.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day. And messages from people I didn't even know. My mate spelled my name in tea lights. And my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings. Next to the lamppost, where I got killed. By a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down.
To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
Mystery Hour continues. The time is 17 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. David is in Eindhoven, continuing the international theme of this week's Mystery Hour. David, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, David. Already? Have you checked the time? It's only 12:15. What's going
on? Well, it was as soon as I heard it, I thought, oh, yes, I know this one. I'll get on the line straight away.
Excellent.
So it's about this cyclone and the description in the shipping forecast.
Yes.
And I think you almost put your finger on it when you said the word cyclonic, because what they say in the shipping forecast is the winds are cyclonic, which means that there's a predictable change in the direction of the wind as a low pressure system passes over.
So a cyclone is a low pressure system. It's not just a right.
A cyclone is. It's called a hurricane in the northern hemisphere and a typhoon in the southern hemisphere, and it's a very strong, low-pressure system. But cyclonic winds are when the wind just changes direction because of a low-pressure system, not a hurricane, but a low-pressure system passes over the area where you are. So the winds can be any speed from force 1 to force 8, I suppose, depending on what kind of low-pressure system it is.
Love it. Qualifications?
I just do a bit of sailing. I'm an amateur sailor.
And how important is the ship? If you're out and about on your boat, how important is the shipping forecast?
Well, it's more of an emotional thing that you get up and listen to it when you're going out sailing, because that's what you do, right? It's part of the ritual. Because the reality is, of course, it's all available online.
I was going to say, you've got all the equipment and things like that, but still, yeah. I mean, it'd be absolute uproar, wouldn't it, if they got rid of the shipping forecast? And why would they?
And because they broadcast it on long wave,
yes,
you can actually pick it up sort of 200-300 miles out at sea, which of course you can't really. Well, I suppose now with Elon and his Starlink thing, you can also pick up the internet out at sea as well. But certainly up until very recently, that just wasn't possible.
It reaches parts that other technologies cannot reach. I love that, David. Have one of the earliest rounds of applause in the history of Mystery Hour, actually.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I like that one. Rodney is in Southall. Rodney, question or answer?
It's a question, actually, James. Yeah.
Carry on, Rodney.
I guess we could call it, I don't know if it's archaeology or paleoanthropology question, but I wonder, how is it that humans ended up settling in completely inhospitable parts of the world, you know, in northern Canada, in the frozen north, in Greenland or Iceland, or is that the same place, depending on how deranged you are? Anyway, but equally, in incredibly hot, desert, harsh environments that, you know, are out to kill you, essentially, in the summer, outrageous heat. And, of course, I understand, James, that, you know, the world's climate has changed, and during different times we've had different, different types of climate in different places, obviously. But I just wonder how it is that a human society, a bunch of hunter-gatherers would have, you know, they would have
picked such a rubbish place to
live.
Like a really rubbish place to live. I mean,
especially they would have been decimated, right? Half the village died when the first winter came. So why would they stay instead of heading out of there? I never quite get it.
The population of the world was much lower as well. So the obvious answer, which is that it was safe, even if it wasn't very nice, they were safe from other humans.
Exactly. Other tribal, you know, tribal.
Doesn't really work.
And so on. But yeah, like I say, half the village died in the first winter, and they say, well, you know what, we'll stick it out. I mean
there wasn't any public transport back then, Rodney, as you know. So, you know, it would have involved a bit of a trek, but they had to trek there in the first place, didn't they?
They had to get there in the first place, obviously.
Why didn't they turn around and come back again?
The climate changed around them, and they slowly adapted. I don't know, but, you know.
So, I mean, you could ask, why do people live in, you would say inhospitable, somebody else might say rubbish, but why did people settle in really inhospitable places when there were so many other places to choose from?
Yeah, historically speaking, obviously we've got all the technology to keep us warm or cool these days, of course. But
even so,
you know, it's tough.
Yeah, but I like that. I really like that question. What made you think of it? What made you think of it?
It's a soggy afternoon in... No, I don't know, just thinking about... I've got relatives in Canada. I've only ever been there in the summer, but I wondered how you could possibly want to be there in the winter. But imagine our ancestors thousands of years back.
And I'm thinking of I grew up in Kidderminster, mate. So I know exactly what you're talking about. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. We've done the shipping forecast one. We still need to know what happens to television and film props when they're thrown into the water. Why plants can grow through several inches of thick and heavy tarmac quite quickly, quite soon after the tarmac has been laid. It makes no sense at first glance. Obviously, it will make sense at second and third. And why do humans, or why did humans, settle in ridiculously inhospitable places when the world is big and the population then was small? I've got some free phone lines. I haven't really been concentrating on the switchboard. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need if you would like to ask your own question. And if you hit the numbers now, you will actually get through. If you can answer any of the remaining questions on the board, and there are only three of them, then the number obviously remains the same. 12:23 is the time. Harry's in Flint in North Wales. Harry, question or answer?
I've got a question for you.
Carry on, mate.
Before the question, I would like to point out that I featured on Mystery Hour about 2 months ago, and I actually won.
Congratulations.
I won the board game. So I've got 100% success rate, so I'd like to, you know...
Well, you can't win it again, mate. That's not how... Well, you're not Donald Trump. I'll tell you what I could give you. I could give you the FIFA board game. That's really shiny. Do you want
what
the FIFA...
a small tin-sized one?
Well, I don't... I mean, it would be a bit of a turn-up for the books if you went double bubble. It's not beyond possibility. Have you played the old one yet? Have you played the original, the version 1.0?
I have. We bought it out at Christmas, and I actually won as well.
And joy was unconfined, am I right?
Oh, it was great. We had a great laugh.
That's what we like to hear. Go on then. Well, you're on the board, although begging probably puts you at the back of the queue so far, Harry. I've got to be honest with you. But it's all to play for.
We'll forget that conversation just happened and we'll start again.
Yeah.
Right, so my question is, I'm on a bit of a health kick at the minute, so I'm eating a lot of eggs.
Does one follow fast upon the other there? I mean, are eggs a particular... I thought you were going to say something like vegetables.
Well, no, they're a high-protein source. You're not too bad on your calorie count.
All right. A bit flatulent, are we? Or not?
Yeah. No.
Okay,
I'm in good shape. Okay. Fine health.
Yeah, carry on.
And what I've realised is, when buying the eggs, let's say they go out of date on the 30th of January, they will only be displayed until the 24th of January or 25th. They give, like, a four-day buffer or five-day buffer.
Paying a lot of attention to the eggs there, Harry.
It just caught my eye, and I seen it, I thought, this is great for Mystery Hour.
Yeah. So what's the question?
So why do the eggs get taken off the shelf before they actually go out of date? Because you can go in and buy...
How do you know they haven't been sold?
It's a good question, but are they going to sell all the eggs before that date?
Probably. I mean, that's the plan in most shops.
Like, you get reduced items, don't you? Do you know when you go?
You can't reduce the egg. Well, now that might be if there is a question here, then that might be the answer. The label says display until, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it says display until the 25th.
Yeah,
but then it's used by the 30th. So I'm just wondering, why did he not display until?
Because you can't mess around with eggs, mate. It's not like a bad egg is a big deal, right? A display until, and then I don't know the answer to this question. I don't know why I'm trying to answer it.
I was going to say, you tried to answer my last question as well.
Yeah, right. Don't spoil it. I think I was doing really well this week. I was on top. I was on top form. So they don't do it to anything else.
No, there's nothing else in the store which will be taken off the shelf.
All right, so why do eggs have their own rules of display until and then remove from?
I think it's a pretty excellent question.
No. Oh, God, mate. I can't believe you actually did that.
I'm only joking.
Right, that's it. He's back. Can we ban Harry, please? Can we put one of those things on his... Oh, that's it now. Thank you, Harry. I tell you, he won't be winning the Mystery Hour board game this week. Tom's in Stockton-on-Tees. Tom, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on, Tom.
So, the tarmac issue, the answer is that the weeds don't grow through the tarmac, really. They grow on the tarmac and in the cracks.
Of course they do. Oh, man, I knew that question was going to do that. It's going to provide an... I said, this will be really obvious, but also fascinating.
Well, I don't know about fascinating.
Well, I'm fascinated, mate, and it's my show, so it counts as fascinating.
You need two things to make the weeds. It's organic matter and moisture. The tarmac is really good at holding the moisture, and the organic matter can come from dust. It can come from bird feces. It can come from animal feces. It could come from anything.
Well, of course it could. And it's so obvious once you've explained it. So, you know, it could actually. It's poor old Graham worried that he's only had his new tarmac down for about 3 years, and he's thinking, how the hell has it come through? And of course, it will break the tarmac as well. So the question gets reversed a bit now, because the roots will be able to sort of make their way through the tiny gaps between, well, won't they? I mean, the roots have to go down as the plant comes up.
Yeah, and that can be as small as you can possibly imagine. So these tiny little micro habitats that live on your driveway, as soon as you just start fertilizing that seed, those tiny roots will grow and grow and grow, make cracks widen, and jobs are good. You've got a weed.
And then a bit of water gets in and freezes, and the crack gets even bigger, and the next thing you know, you've got a driveway full of potholes. And other radio presenters have got a phone in. Because we love potholes. phone-in hosts love potholes.
No potholes are driving phone-ins.
What we need now is a nice pop song about potholes, and we could do a whole hour on it. So what I was saying about Graham, in a way, he was quite lucky, because you could have some organic matter growing on your freshly tarmac drive within days of it happening.
100%. And it can work with, obviously, your artificial grass and things like that as well.
Obviously. That happened to me.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, of course it did. So mentally, you think it's coming up through it, but of course it's not. It's starting afresh on it.
And it grows both ways, obviously, so you get your roots growing down and then the weed growing up.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, though, what are your qualifications for this?
I used to work for a manufacturer of driveway products and patios and things like that.
There you go. And so people would complain.
People like Graham calling up and saying, we've just got our new driveway and it's rubbish because it's got stuff growing on it. And we're like, yeah, that's just nature.
That's a seed, mate, that has been watered and started. So the moral of the story is sweep your driveway more, Graham and others. Isn't it, though? Get a pressure washer. There's hours of fun to be had. And that is one of my favourite questions and answers in a very, very long time. Well played, Tom. Lovely stuff. Thank you, Tom. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
Donald Trump has revealed his so-called Board of Peace at a ceremony in Davos. The UK is currently refusing to sign because of concerns about Vladimir Putin's possible involvement. Sir Keir Starmer says the hard yards of bolstering Arctic security can begin as he welcomed Donald Trump's decision to drop tariff threats to take over Greenland. The US president announced last night that a framework of a future deal had begun. And 29 local council elections will be postponed in May as part of a plan to reorganise local authorities in England. Reform UK has started a legal challenge against the government over the delays, which will be heard next month. LBC weather, cloudy with spells of rain for most and snow on the Scottish hills. Windy in the north, mainly along North Sea coasts. Drier in the far north with rain easing in the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Listen up, loser! Man, my program, Get Jacked with Jack, is designed to guarantee you a jack jam. Bam! Want to get bigger than Bigfoot? Leaner than the Tower of Pisa?
Mamma mia!
I'll get you shredded in your sleep. Get sleep shredded! Show evolution who's boss! Bam!
You what? Don't fall for fads this January. Holland & Barrett give you the facts. Get expert advice on products you can trust. Holland & Barrett.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
That's it. We need a bigger car.
Smart speaker. What's an award-winning SUV?
The Tucson is an award-winning midsize SUV and is available for a 24-hour test drive.
They look great. And it's a self-charging hybrid too.
Smart speaker. Search offers on a Hyundai Tucson.
The Tucson is available with 2 years 0% APR. And it's Hyundai, by the way.
Discover the Hyundai Tucson self-charging hybrid. Ends 31st of March, 25% deposit, finance subject to status. Hyundai UK is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Another early morning gym session skipped.
Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail, but a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nuthatch Adventure Park. Book now at nuthatch.com.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is underway. TV props that disappear into canals, rivers, any body of water, really. What happens to them? Because you're not really allowed to toss stuff in ponds like that. Tarmac, that was beautifully answered. Why do human beings settle in really horrible places? Like, why would they do it? Because it wasn't as if, I mean, I suppose probably they were hiding from marauding hordes, but it doesn't necessarily make sense that they wouldn't have found somewhere a little bit nicer to pitch their tents. And why do eggs have their own rules when it comes to sell by, use by and display by? Adrian's in Bristol. Adrian, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's Aidan, but it's a question, please.
Sorry, Aidan. That was my fault as well. I misread it. God, dear. Anyway, carry on.
I'm sure you've been aging enough to remember cleaning your teeth with a manual toothbrush before the dawn of electric toothbrushes.
Yes. So lots of people still use, manual toothbrushes.
I do it when I'm travelling. Yeah. So you've got to do what you've got to do, haven't you?
Yeah. Go on.
So I'm sure you remember dental advice, brush your teeth for 2 minutes. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure with an electric toothbrush, you've still got to clean your teeth for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Why? What's the point of the electric? Where's the advantage? Why are we not getting the time saving?
Oh, I see. So, well, it does. I don't know whether I really like this question or I really hate it.
You can't
brush your teeth too much, can you? Really?
Apparently there's ones that give you the right pressure on your teeth so you don't over put too much pressure on them.
I just think if you had different rules for different toothbrushes, we'd all get very confused, Aidan.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a selling point when I was before.
But you don't have to time it. I think it is a bit short. You don't have to time it on the electric one. It does it for you. It starts making a different buzz when you've...
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what is the advantage of an electric toothbrush?
Sounds like the intro of Terminator, mine does.
Yeah, it's same. Is that the question? What is the advantage of an electric toothbrush if you have to use them for the same amount of time?
Basically, yeah.
But it does a better job, doesn't it? It's got an oscillating head, mate.
Well, yeah. I'd appreciate a time saving with it as well, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably all right doing it for a minute. Don't quote me on this to anybody in authority, but I reckon you're probably, from a minute with an electric, you probably get about the same as you do for 2 minutes. Also, how many different levels of vigour are there for the manual? I mean, some people might go at it like a fiddler's elbow, and other people will be quite kind of soporific and slow when they're brushing their teeth.
When the battery's on the way out, it's half speed.
That's true as well. I don't know what the question is, to be honest, but I have decided that I like it. And it's going to be a variation on why don't electric toothbrushes take less time than manual ones?
Manuals, yeah.
I've never heard it called a manual toothbrush before.
I mean,
Can I have four manual toothbrushes, please? And a fork handle. Thank you, Aidan. We'll see how we get on with that. Alan is in Cromer. What a beautiful part of the world. Alan, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question.
What's on at the end of the pier at the moment? Is there anything on at the moment? Is it gone into hibernation?
Yeah, I'd say it's been mothballed for the winter.
Okay, because you have a lovely Christmas show, but I don't imagine that persists far into January. Anyway, I digress. What is your question?
Helium canisters.
Hmm.
Is it heavier when it's empty or when it's full?
Helium canisters. Oh, well, it's probably...
Or is it the same?
Well, because it's a vacuum inside, isn't it? That's why the cylinder has to be so thick. It's not going to be replaced by air.
Helium canisters are quite light. If you're thinking of LPG gas...
No, I'm not. I'm thinking of the stuff you fill up the party balloons with.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, it's not, like, really heavy, but it's thick. No. The walls of it are quite thick, aren't they?
I don't know if they are.
Like the not nitrous oxide business that the kids do. It's a bit like that.
Yeah, it's a relative, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway.
So you think the question is helium heavier or lighter than air?
No.
Exactly.
You put a canister on the scales,
yes,
and it's full,
yes,
and it's, I don't know, 5 kilos. If, yes, you empty it,
yes,
is it still 5 kilos?
Well, yeah, probably, unless you've got incredibly sensitive scales. No, I mean that. I mean, that is the short answer. But if you did have incredibly, incredibly sensitive scales, I think it would be marginally lighter, because helium surely is lighter than nothing. It's liquid helium in there.
Liquid, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Because LPG, if you use ethylene LPG bottles, your barbecue's empty or full by picking it up.
Yeah. But
helium, I'm less concerned.
I mean, you can't start bringing barbecues into it. The question is about... literally about one canister of helium.
Yeah.
And if I empty it, is it lighter or heavier than it was before, presuming I've got scale sensitive enough to weigh it?
Yeah.
I'm saying lighter, but I've got absolutely no qualification, so I'm not...
We're 50-50 at best, aren't we?
Well, you've got a fair chance of getting it right. Yeah, it's better than Brexit. So I'll wait until someone who knows what they're talking about rings in, shall I?
I think we need a maths person or a science person.
More of a chemistry person. What we need is a chemist with a bit of physics, or a physicist with a bit of chemistry. Goes with the territory.
Superior knowledge to us, certainly.
You're on. Have you always lived in Cromer?
No, been there about a dozen years or so.
Lovely part of the world. Really, since really lovely. Isn't it beautiful down there?
I've enjoyed it, yeah.
Would you allow me to go full Alan Partridge for a while?
Uh-huh.
Do you know that I love the bus journey? I mean, to be honest, they should keep it secret, because it's better value than some of the stuff people pay money for. You get the bus from King's Lynn to Wales Next to the Sea,
yeah,
have a little wander around Wales Next to the Sea, and then get the bus from Wales Next to the Sea to Cromer.
Coast Hopper.
Oh, yeah, exactly that one, the Coast Hopper. And it's such a glorious... If you sit on the left-hand side of the bus so that you're, you know... see adjacent, and I could do that all day. I really could. It's such a beautiful journey. You're very lucky to live there. On we go. I told you I was going to go full Partridge. That's also in Norfolk, for people who don't know. Tim's in Lewisham, but we're not talking to him. We're talking to Tom. Tom, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Speaking with you.
Likewise.
Thank you. So I'm a first-generation immigrant. I rolled up on the shores from the Federal Republic of Germany in 2000.
And, willkommen. Bienvenue.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And so I'm sporting something which I've learned, the sort of cheeky or cognoscenti Brits call the TTA, the thick Teutonic accent. That's the TTA.
A thick Teutonic accent.
Yeah, it's
the
TTA. Okay.
Yes.
And so it disappears. So when I sing, I'm not here to, you know, plug my EP by no means, but when I sing, it seems to dissipate or disappear, and...
I think by your own admission, you have quite a strong German accent in your speaking voice.
That's right.
But in your singing voice, you believe that you don't have any accent at all.
That's it. I've got confirmation. So a security guy, I played the Peter, and he said, oh, my God, you sound like an Englishman.
We're going to need a little bit of a demonstration, aren't we, Tom?
Well, it's going to be difficult to sing here now.
Why?
I mean, I need my guitar.
Go and get your guitar.
To get my guitar, I'll
yes, please.
To open the...
How far away is it?
Well, it's just...
Potter's Bar.
Get it all of a little... I mean, it's...
It's almost like you were expecting this to happen, Tom.
I'm so a bit tired today, and also...
Save the excuses until you've finished. You might not need them.
That's fine, okay.
Right, before you sing, but just to establish the strength of the speaking voice accent, could you please say, the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain?
Rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain.
Yeah, that's strong. Okay, now let's sing.
Yeah, but I have to say, it depends on the form of the day, right? Like, sometimes, if I'm really lucky, you know, someone mistakes me for South African or for Dutch, which then, you know,
So your accent comes and goes up and down, but yeah, but it's the singing voice we need to hear now.
Yeah, so let's look
at it. I'm cleaning windows.
I found a song.
Okay.
I found a song here.
Go on then.
It's difficult. I'm not really good at memorizing my own songs, to be honest.
That's all right.
Therefore, the recording. I do apologize. I've got to go back upstairs.
No, that's fine. Take your time.
All right, thanks. Okay, we've got mountain. Oh, yeah, across that bridge. Is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've heard it yet.
No, that's true. Let's get a...
Just make sure Sheila's ready, will we? Okay, carry on.
So, because I have no headset, so I put down the phone.
Yes.
And then I will...
Carry on.
Well, it starts.
Okay.
Right.
Shall I count you in? I've gone for a shorter intro. Are you going to tell him or am I? Is he going to do the whole thing, do we think?
He just suffices, right?
No, that was perfect. That is uncanny. I mean, that could have been... You could have been born any... I mean, that was so clearly...
Thank you.
Accent-free. It was a beautiful song. Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'll put my next EP, and if you allow me, I will mention my...
Oh,
my
please. First
one. So it's called Vitamin H. And
yes.
H stands for happy, so Vitamin Happy.
Oh, that's nice.
Tom Kuhn, K-U-M-L-O-T-H-N.
As in Thomas Kuhn, the famous philosopher of science?
Yeah. Just that when I arrived in 2000 and I opened my first HP account, I made the fatal mistake of not dropping the umlaut. So I resolved it into UE.
Yes.
Which means now all sort of 25 years of
Portent
and malarkey, Kuhn and stuff. And so, yeah. But yeah, it's like the philosopher of science.
So why does Thomas's voice sound so incredibly, I mean, basically could have been Hugh Grant that singing, because it sounds so English. When he sings, but he sounds quite extremely German when he talks, still.
I can speak verse, though. I can speak verse.
Verse? Are we talking about poems or sausages?
You take your pick, you know. I have to deliver a sausage today, actually, to my guitar tech.
Where can people get hold of Vitamin H, Tom?
It's on all the streaming sites, I guess. Spotify. I might have 12 monthly listeners already.
Yes. I don't know whether this is the best or the worst moment of the week, Thomas.
I mean,
we've been doing a lot of heavy lifting this week, so we needed some light relief. Thank you for that. And why does his voice have, I mean, it's so English. I don't know. I presume you could hear everything as clearly as I could, but that was uncanny, right? It's so English. It was like, I don't know. It was almost as if Terry Thomas or Leslie Phillips was in the room.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Donald Trump and the big piece of ice. Was it all about concentrating European minds? Or should Greenland still be worried? And should the UK ever join the President's Board of Peace?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Okay, done. Move that. And, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy-to-manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health?
It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. Helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Why do human beings settle in inhospitable places? Why do eggs have their very own rules when it comes to use-by and sell-by and display-by dates? What's the point of an electric toothbrush if you have to use it for the same amount of time as a manual toothbrush? Does an empty helium canister weigh less or more than a full helium canister? And why does Thomas's quite strong German accent disappear when he sings? 03456060973. How's it? Ah, Professor Hal in the house! Question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Hal. How are you, mate? And I ask that because a lot of people listening often ask me how you are, because at one point you were a weekly fixture on Mystery Hour, but obviously, you know, you've grown up now and you've had to go off and make your way in the world.
Not at all. I'm delighted. I'm teaching forensic chemistry at another slightly shyer university, but glad to be contributing as such. But, James, I turned my back on Mystery Hour for 2 years, and this is what happens.
I know.
Helium is not a liquid. Helium boils at minus 269.
Sorry, it was me. I read a text. I shouldn't have done that. I apologise.
Okay. The answer to the question is absolutely. As these canisters empty, they get lighter because the gas is escaping. Literally, helium is compressed and forced into the canister, so as it comes out, it gets lighter. Now, the other interesting thing is helium comes from the ground. It doesn't come from the air. And it comes from the alpha decay of uranium. And it's one of the few things to leave the Earth because it's so fast and so light, it radiates out into space. So we're wasting it all on these heart-shaped Valentine balloons, which, incidentally, I never get.
Same.
And we should be keeping it. We should be keeping it.
Can't be messing around with the helium. I think I knew that. You probably told me that before. I think I knew that we were a little bit playing a bit fast and loose with our helium.
No, we do. We need to keep it because it's a finite resource as such.
So it gets lighter. And what's in it? Is it a vacuum inside? Is that why the walls are so thick?
No. What happens is the walls are so thick because it's under pressure. But what happens is as soon as the equilibrates with the external pressure, it's just full of helium, which can't come out because there's no excess pressure. But literally,
What else do we need it for, Professor Hal?
We need it. It's a very convenient way of getting very cold temperatures in labs. It liquefies at minus 269. And so things like CT scanners and magnetic resonance machines need it. And also the Large Hadron Collider needs it for the very cold work it does. So it's essential. And there's only about 3 or 4 mines in the country that produce in the world that produce it.
Good grief. You live and learn. Qualifications?
I was delighted to be the Professor of Public Understanding of Science at the University of Brighton, but I'm a visiting professor at a different university right now.
Fantastic. And here is your probably 789th round of applause.
Thank you, James.
No, thank you, Hal. It'll be nice to see you soon. I hope you're well. Are you at the Polish Centre anytime soon in Hammersmith?
No, I was there actually about 8 weeks ago. I gave a lecture on General Sosabowski
No one tells me anything, because for people who don't know, Hal's grandfather is the General Sosabowski of a Bridge Too Far fame, played by Gene Hackman famously in A Bridge Too Far. But that's Hal's real life actual grandfather, and you work tirelessly keeping his memory and his spirit alive.
Well, we're opening an exhibition Airborne Museum in Arnhem in April next year. So if you just drop me an email, I'll send you an invite for the opening, my dear chap.
That'd be nice. And if I can't make it, then we'll do a hit. We'll do a live hit with you on the opening of it. So don't forget, all right?
I won't forget. How delightful.
I mean it. Have you seen Wayne lately?
We had a conversation over Christmas, so we bump into each other from time to time.
That's nice. Professor Howe, thank you very much. Mystery Hour Royalty, as you could probably gather. 12:52 is the time. We gave him his round of applause, didn't we, Keith? Which we did indeed. James is in Twickenham. James, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you.
Carry on, then.
Right. Basically, why do people settle in inhospitable places?
I don't know. Why do people settle in inhospitable places?
Here we go. It's all to do with seasons. When we were a hunter-gatherer society, we used to chase the food sources around, where they would be actually focused.
Yeah.
So if it was summer, we would be focusing on one particular food source. If it was winter, we would be focusing on another. But when the seasons change, when we didn't have cities, we would be forced to move around the globe. And so basically that's why we spread out from different continents in the world. But the thing is basically when you don't have any idea of when the season is going to change and you've suddenly got an abundant food source, that's great. We're all fishing for salmon. Suddenly the winter comes in, it's frozen, and people, being as clever as we are, we're forced to specialise.
So I've got almost all of that, but... The supply of salmon hasn't gone away. That's why I dig a hole in the ice, is it? Or, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So basically, the idea is when people would follow the herds migrating around the world, some people would stay behind because they would think that the food source was here, and that's when they're stuck in a particular remote area.
And then why didn't they move the next season? Because, I mean, it's pretty flipping cold in some of these spots, or indeed pretty flipping hot.
It certainly is, yeah, but people being what they like to know, you suddenly find that if you've spent an entire season fishing for this and you've seen this weather change, okay, we'll stay here. You know, it's the idea, do we move on, do we stay put?
Yeah, I get that. But it is the human condition, isn't it, to settle? We've got very, very few... populations are permanently peripatetic. Oh, that's a lovely little tongue twister. A permanently peripatetic population is as rare as hen's teeth, James. You've got the Bedouin, I suppose, have you?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting one because, blimey, it takes a particular, skill set to survive out in the desert.
Of course it does.
And people have done that.
Right.
So, they've obviously found a way...
And they're elected to, and they're still elected. Yeah, right, qualifications?
Yeah. I've got a degree in archaeology.
Oh, fantastic. Have a round of applause to go with it.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. 12:55 is the time. Nathaniel's in Dover. Nathaniel, question or answer?
James, I've got an answer for you.
Carry on. Fantastic.
Perfect. So, eggs.
Yes.
Display dates. There is a very important reason why they have a display until and a best before date on it.
Yeah.
So, the recommendation to retailers to manage their stock is to have a display until, so they bring the products with the shorter date to the front and put the newer products at the back so customers pick them up first.
Yeah. Is there an age at which you start doing that? I did it yesterday, actually, with some cherries. There's an age that you reach to the back of the shelf to get something that's got a slightly longer shelf life on it than the egg, the front. I actually did it. And I feel a bit ridiculous.
There's a test you can do for eggs to tell if they're good to eat, if they're past their date or not.
Float them.
And the date test is you get a glass of water.
But this isn't unique to eggs.
No, because the display until is also used on perishable foods like salads, meal deals, meats, milk.
So he was wrong. The question was based on a false premise that this is only eggs that we do this to.
It was, but it was misguided because some retailers don't do it anymore.
And also, the eggs are going to have a longer life, aren't they, than a salad or a piece of meat?
Honestly, eggs are fine. I've had eggs a month past their best before date. You've just got to be sensible. And if you put it in a glass of water and it floats, that is a bad egg. If it sinks, it's okay.
Yeah, I knew that. I don't know why I knew that. I've never used it to test because, happily, I've never found myself in the need of wondering whether I should risk a dodgy egg. I only live about 4 minutes from Morrison's, mate. Qualifications?
There's two. So one, I used to look after and keep therapy chickens.
Oh, yeah,
and
lovely.
I also used to run a food-based charity where I live, supplying people with out-of-date items that are safe to eat.
Oh, gosh. You have to be careful on that one.
Oh, no, you'd be surprised. Anything with a best before date is edible. as long as you use your common sense.
No, I agree with that. I'm just saying that you'd be held responsible. I'll take a risk with my own health, but I'd be a bit wary.
Oh, you have to be 4 years.
No, I'm saying it's good work. Yeah. Stop flipping badgering me. I'm saying it was a lovely thing to do, but I'd be a little bit wary because I can't even persuade my own family to do the smell test instead of looking at a random number on the front of the bacon. If it's gone green, stick it in the bin. If it hasn't, scoff it.
I grew up with even more liberal views on that. Just cut the green bit off.
Cut the green bit. Crikey. There you go. Round of applause for Nathaniel. We're not going to get an answer to the toothbrush question or to Tom singing, are we? I can tell. Guy's in Gerrard's Cross. Guy, question or answer? Guy. Ali's in Great Buckingham. Book 'em, Dano. Question or answer, Ali?
It's an answer to the singing question.
Oh, wunderbar.
Yeah, it's good.
Carry on.
When people want to sing a song that they really, really like, they will inadvertently sing in the same accent as the music that they originally heard. Mm-hmm. And this explains why Mick Jagger from Dartford sings as if he came from the deep south states of the United States of America.
Okay, so because Thomas is singing in English, he is, and even if he's doing original material, he will be subconsciously copying the singers, English language singers that he likes and admires. Or American.
Well, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards both loved the blues from Louisiana, and when they sang the songs of the blues artists from there, and Mick still does it to this day, they sing in the accent that they originally heard it. There are one or two performers who sing in their native accent, like the Proclaimers sing with a Scottish accent, but most, like 99.9% of people, I mean, I used to be in a band, and when we did the Johnny Cash songs, I would sing in the accent of Johnny Cash. You know, I hear the train a coming, rather than singing in English or in a Scottish accent.
What is your accent just pure Scottish?
My accent is half Scottish, half English.
I picked something else up at the beginning.
Where I come from in Aberdeenshire, we have a regional accent called Doric.
Okay.
So I have to modify my accent when I move out of Aberdeenshire, and then I have to modify even more when I move to Great Bookham.
And so there it is. I mean, qualifications, you've told us, but tell us again.
I used to be in a band.
Will we know it?
Probably not.
Okay. The Ealing Jazz Club, of course, was where they... I don't know if they met there, but that was an early point for Keith Richards and Mick Jagger to indulge their love of American blues. And people like Alexis Korner would have been playing there back in the day.
And those jazz musicians would all, when they sang songs, they would have sang in the style of the American jazz.
I'm very late for Sheila. I could do this all day, but I can't. So have a round of applause. I'm going to give the game this week to Tom, who answered the question about tarmac. I don't know why. I do know why. It was my favourite contribution of the week, although there was lots of other very, very good ones. In fact, you might say they were the best. They were the fun. No, you won't. If you missed any of today's show, you listen back and go into Free Global Player, helps the app, accept to date, top stories, opinions. Put the news categories in the order you want. Rewind live radio. Listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed. That was fascinating, that accent language stuff, yeah. At 3 today, singer Meghan Trainor is being pilloried for choosing surrogacy in order to have a child. What happened when you did it? Maybe you were the surrogate. Let's talk about that. Could a way be opening up for Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham to return to Parliament? This Board of Peace, Trump's Board of Peace, what is it? And are we, the UK, right to stay out for now, at least? Donald Trump has been making positive noises about an end to the war in Ukraine again. But what of this framework for a deal over Greenland? Was it all about concentrating European minds, all the tantruming and the threats? Or should Greenland and Denmark, and maybe the rest of us, still be worried?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The UK will not yet sign up to Donald Trump's so-called border peace due to concerns about the possible involvement of Vladimir Putin. President Trump revealed the group at the World Economic Forum in Davos earlier, where he suggested he would work with the UN.
On the 8 wars that I ended, I never spoke to the United Nations about any of them. And you would think that I should have. You would think they could have done those 8 wars, but they couldn't have. And they tried, I guess, in some of them, but they didn't try hard enough. But there's tremendous potential with the United Nations. And I think the combination of the Board of Peace with the kind of people we have here, coupled with the United Nations, can be, you know, something very, very unique for the world.
The Kremlin says President Putin is still considering the offer, despite Mr. Trump claiming he had accepted. The panel was originally set up to oversee Gaza's future, but it's since been suggested it has a much wider purpose. The Prime Minister has welcomed President Trump's decision to drop tariff threats over a US takeover of Greenland. He announced last night the framework of a future deal on Arctic security with the alliance's Secretary-General. Mark Rutte says getting countries to spend more on defence shows Trump has only strengthened the alliance.
Without him, again, we would never have come to this 5%. And it is crucial not only to equalize with the US and therefore take that big irritant away, but also because we have to do this because of the Russian threat.
Donald Trump suggests a settlement on the Ukraine war is coming very soon as the two leaders meet in Switzerland. Volodymyr Zelensky is due to address world leaders this afternoon. 29 local council elections will be postponed this May as part of plans to reorganise English local authorities. Labour has been accused of running scared from voters. Reform UK has begun a legal challenge against the government, which will be heard next month. And an amber weather warning for rain is in place for parts of northeast Scotland until 6 o'clock tonight. Forecasters say parts of Angus, Perth and Kinross could see up to 3 inches of rain. Police Scotland has also warned of potential travel disruption. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 47 points at 10,185. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with spells of rain for most and snow on the Scottish hills. Windy in the north, mainly along North Sea coasts. Drier in the far north with rain easing in the southwest later. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. So no invasion of Greenland, no punitive tariffs because we disagree that he should invade Greenland. So they're, for now at least, off the table. This framework of a deal, there's lots of positivity about it this morning from the people involved. You heard Mark Rutte there in the news bulletin, the NATO chief, and Donald Trump has obviously been saying he's satisfied with what he regards as a win. It'll be a forever deal, as he put it. He'll meet President Zelensky of Ukraine this afternoon. There was the signing of the Board of Peace agreement. The UK has not got on board that. We'll talk more about that after two. We'll keep a close eye on anything that comes out of the Ukraine, of the meeting with the Ukrainian president. But I want to go back to and start with the whole Greenland issue. It was interesting yesterday, wasn't it? Because in that very long speech, in a sense, that was the main thing that we were waiting to hear about. But this framework of a deal, it seems to me, from what I know about it so far, which isn't a great deal, but Yvette Cooper, the Foreign Secretary, put a bit of meat on the bone, didn't she, about the way the NATO allies had banded together to create some kind of offer, I guess, the detail of which we'll find out in good time, to Donald Trump to give him a climb down position, I suppose, without it calling it that, and him being able to still say he got what he wanted in Greenland. Again, there's a lot more to find out. But do you think all of the brouhaha from him over the last few days, and it's more than brouhaha, it was threats. You know, if you live in Greenland or in Denmark, these were very serious threats that you had to take seriously. Was it all just about concentrating European minds, NATO minds? I think what we played of Mark Rutte there in the bulletin is interesting. He's saying, he's essentially saying the Trump approach, the Trump method has made us all sit up and notice. This morning, Donald Trump himself said that on this, he will work in conjunction with the United Nations.
We're committed to ensuring Gaza is demilitarized, properly governed, and beautifully rebuilt. It's going to be a great plan, and that's where the border peace really started. And I think we can spread out to other things as we succeed with Gaza. We're going to be very successful in Gaza. It's going to be a great thing to watch. And we can do other things. We can do numerous other things. Once this border is completely formed, we can do pretty much whatever we want to do. And we'll do it in conjunction with the United Nations. You know, I've always said the United Nations has got tremendous potential, has not used it. But there's tremendous potential in the United Nations, and you have some great people at the United Nations. But so far it hasn't. You know, on the 8 wars that I ended, I never spoke to the United Nations about any of them. And you would think that I should have. You would think they could have done those 8 wars, but they couldn't have. And they tried, I guess, in some of them, but they didn't try hard enough. But there's tremendous potential.
It's interesting what he's saying here. We're going to talk more about the Board of Peace, as he's calling it, after 2. But I think his words there on the UN and working together with the UN, the clear fact that he's been able to step away from the more explosive approach that he was talking about on Copenhagen and work with NATO allies, and those NATO allies, the likes of the UK and the EU countries, clearly banded together. I mean, the Foreign Secretary wasn't hiding it today. They banded together in order to deliver a response and maybe, let's hope, a solution that allows Donald Trump to get what he thinks he needs on Greenland in terms of security and around Greenland, but that it doesn't go as far as he and some of his administration were suggesting. An indication on both stories there, I think, that he can cooperate when he wants to. Lona Tiles joins me, journalist and author based in Copenhagen, and Sir Adam Thompson will join us in a moment, former UK permanent